This is the Quality News Network. In the Gaza Strip, at least 12 Palestinians were killed as Israeli troops advanced near populated towns. One Israeli soldier was killed, the first fatality since the offensive began a week ago. In Iraq, near the holy city of Najaf, 12 people died and 40 were injured in a suicide bombing at a Shiite Muslim shrine. Many of the dead and injured were Iranian pilgrims. At the White House, President Bush is urging diplomacy and a united international response to resolve the North Korean missile standoff. He says he has spoken with the leaders of China, South Korea, Japan, and Russia over the past few days. In Mexico City, it appears the conservative ruling party candidate has won Sunday's close presidential election. Felipe Calderon has an insurmountable lead in the vote count. His liberal rival refuses to accept the election results and has begun to challenge them in court. Out of the 41 million votes cast, fewer than 200,000 votes separate the two candidates. In New Jersey, lawmakers have reportedly reached an agreement on a state budget. One official says it includes a sales tax increase that would raise $1 billion a year and help close the state's $4.5 billion budget gap. The deal comes after a six-day government shutdown. In Austin, Texas, a federal judge ruled that the state Republican Party must keep Tom DeLay's name on the November ballot, even though the former House Majority Leader dropped his reelection bid and resigned his seat. President Bush will begin a series of formal news conferences outside of Washington beginning on Friday in Chicago. A White House official says this will allow the president to listen to people from different parts of the country and get a sense of what is on their minds. And President Bush celebrates his 60th birthday today. He says he doesn't feel old. In New York, the state's highest court ruled that gay couples cannot be married under state law. Additionally, the court said this restriction is not a violation of the state's constitution. Also in Georgia, the state Supreme Court reinstated a gay marriage ban that had won voter approval in 2004. The Space Shuttle Discovery linked up with the International Space Station today. The visit is expected to last for a week or more. And a new federal report says that high levels of carbon dioxide are altering the chemistry of the world's oceans and could be harming the animals living there. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is coming up next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Without admitting wrongdoing, Merrill Lynch has agreed to a nearly $30 million settlement with Enron that will settle charges that it helped the company commit fraud. Autopsy results on former Enron founder Kenneth Lay, who died of a massive heart attack yesterday, reveal that the 64-year-old suffered from heart disease. Lay was awaiting sentencing for fraud and conspiracy when he died at his vacation home in Aspen, Colorado. In Washington, an FBI computer consultant faces up to a year in prison after he pleaded guilty to computer hacking charges. The consultant allegedly used free software he found on the internet to obtain the secret passwords of the FBI director. Free Coca-Cola employees are facing charges of stealing confidential information from their company and trying to sell it to rival PepsiCo for $1.5 million. The three suspects were arrested yesterday after assistance from Pepsi and the FBI. GM's board will meet tomorrow to discuss a possible alliance with Nissan and Renault. The idea was proposed by billionaire investor Kurt Kerkorian, who owns the largest share in GM. Certified pre-owned cars are rising in popularity. According to statistics from J.D. Power and Associates, they now make up 41% of all used car dealership sales. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $75.14 a barrel. And taking a look at Wall Street, the Dow is up 73 points, the Nasdaq up 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Yes, indeedy. Here in the remote, undisclosed location in the hills and hollers of the wilds of wonderful West Virginia, it is Thursday evening, about 6 minutes past the hour here. I'm Bob Kincaid, and to be quite honest with you, I don't know which direction to turn in this evening. It's not just every day it's Dear Leader's birthday. And, dear God, yeah, you want fitting? You know, I don't pay a lot of attention. I don't pay a lot of attention to the, astrological signs, but imagine, if you will, my ironic lack of surprise when I checked to see what Dear Leader's astrological sign was. It's Cancer. Well, of course it is. He's a cancer on the body politic of the United States and the world. You know, of course, we're not surprised. But, you know, I had to run out there and find out what it is that it means to be Cancer. Clannish and moody, attached to the past, a worrier and a clinger, jealousy. Hoo-wee. Is that just George Bush, or is that... It can't be everybody who was born on this date. Good qualities, patient, sensitive, romantic. Well, maybe with Jeff Gannon. Sociable and maternal. He's maternal. Dear Leader is maternal. And to identify your own personal feelings and put selfishness aside will be your life's work. And, you know, just as with everything else that evil little man has ever touched, he's failed at that, too. Identify your own personal feelings and put selfishness aside. He couldn't do that if he tried. And God knows he isn't trying. Now, I want to share something with you, and that is I happen to be back here as Agnes produced the Radio Inside Scoop with our good friend Mark Levine this afternoon. If you missed that program, you missed something very, very special. A conversation with her name was Nani Darwish. A former resident of Gaza, an American citizen now, who put more light and perspective on the issues and the hate and the hell and the damnation that is the Levant right now than I've heard in a long time. Not out of anger or not out of... She didn't sound like she had any motive at all. But to... just put out a little bit of perspective, and Mark spent an absolutely brilliant hour interviewing her. You really must start checking out Radio Inside Scoop with Mark Levine. It airs, of course, at 2 p.m. Eastern Time here on the Horn. And I can't help but think that if you do, you will be pleased. You'll be pleased. You'll be engaged. Mark came along. Of course, he's been doing this sort of thing for 3 or 4 years now himself. And I knew that he would be a nice fit for the network because long before he ever heard of us, he was doing the style that we refer to as conversation radio. And it really is an addition and a blessing and a bonus to this network to have him in the 2 p.m. Eastern time slot. So do check out Radio Inside Scoop with our good friend Mark Levine. And, you know, every now and then it comes around on the program where I can see the tangible evidence of our efforts. Now, if you were listening last night, yesterday, you heard perhaps our interview with West Virginia Education Association President Charlie DeLauder. Now, I have heard a lot of positive feedback, especially because I asked that gentleman about the plight of the innocents who attend school literally in poisonous circumstances at Marsh Fork Elementary. And I was copied in on a note that was sent to Mr. DeLauder today. I wanted to share a little bit of it with you. I don't think the author will mind too much. The author says, hello, Mr. DeLauder. I listened to your interview on the Bob Kincaid Show last night. I was impressed with your candor and willingness to answer Mr. Kincaid's questions in a straightforward and honest manner. When you were asked about Marsh Fork Elementary School, you didn't skirt around the issue and addressed it head on. I commend you for that. You have my utmost respect. Marsh Fork Elementary is an issue we have been working on since March 2004. We've recently organized a fundraising campaign we have named Pennies of Promise. Our goal is to raise the funds to build a new school in our community. There are several very good locations within 5 miles of the current location. The school and these children have fallen victim, this is a great phrase, to a dysfunctional regulatory system that has failed in its duty to protect the health and safety of our children. If we do not stand up for these kids, listen, if we do not stand up for these kids, we have also failed as a society. The state school board and the governor's office are playing Russian roulette with the lives of our children. It's really as simple as that. I love it when this network can be part of true, profound grassroots organizing. Because that's a big part of what this program is, empowering people to stand up and speak. So to all of you who wrote to Mr. Charlie DeLauder, I do appreciate your efforts on behalf of the children of Marsh Fork Elementary School. And, you know, you don't have to be a West Virginian to care about the kids at that school, because there are schools all over that have problems. I would not deny that for an instant. But I must point out that not too many schools have literally 2.5 billion gallons of cancer-causing sludge and goo hanging over the children's and the teachers' heads as they attempt to teach and to learn one from another. This is a very special problem, and again, penniesofpromise.org. There is a means there by which you can contribute to the effort to build these children a school. As far as I'm concerned, that's the very definition of grassroots organizing. The Raleigh County Board of Education has failed. The State School Building Authority has failed. The governor of the state of West Virginia, Joe Manchin, has failed. The Department of Environmental Protection has failed. Massey Energy, they didn't even try. They don't care. They don't care how many the kids they poison or how many teachers they help cause cancers in, as long as the share price of a ton of coal goes up another half a nickel. You see. So when you are faced with that much failure, then it becomes a defining issue for a community and for a people. And in this instance, the folks who truly care about the children at Marsh Fork Elementary are standing up. And in the face of the manifest failure on a systemic level of every corner of government, these people are taking the American way and dedicating themselves to the idea that they can do it themselves. I find that incredibly, incredibly inspiring. Now, it's 15 minutes past the hour. Coming up on the program, what do you want? Look, I'll let you drive the bus tonight if you want. Whatever you want to talk about is game for me. Tom DeLay still on the ballot? I kind of like that, really. A little follow-up on Kenny Boy Lay? Yeah, I think that's called for. And a story about Dear Leader's trip to Austria that I think you are going to just find mind-boggling. It might actually make your ears flap. All of that is ahead in tonight's program. Of course, the biggest part of the program, as ever, is your input. And the phone number, I trust you know. If you don't, if you're new to the program, the number is 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4, head on. Email roars into my computer to bob@headonradio.com. It's all ever so easy. I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is the Head On Radio Network.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude Wally and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. Just stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard, and we could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
The First Amendment reads, "The people shall not be deprived or abridged of their right to speak."
The odds are, the person you just heard is an African American.
Because African Americans are twice as likely to suffer a stroke as white Americans.
That's twice as likely a stroke could rob you of the freedom to speak your mind.
The freedom to shout from mountaintops.
The freedom to tell your mother you love her.
And it's twice as likely a stroke could take your life.
Therefore, it's twice as crucial for us to do something about preventing a stroke.
Learn how you can help beat the odds.
Start by calling 1-888-4-STROKE or go online to strokeassociation.org.
Join the power to end stroke.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. I'm sorry. I'm a child of my generation, and Eruption is one of those just sinful indulgences for me. Oh, that's just lovely. Just lovely. Let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend David in Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Eruption, 56 seconds of guitar orgasm. No kid that went out and bought a Fender guitar to try to do that could ever, ever have an orgasm as long as Eddie did the day he recorded that.
Well, that's true, and I also suspect that that recording is the cause of more kids giving up guitar.
Oh, it scared a bunch of kids out of ever. You know, there was a dividing line. If you were 19... and you were trying to part out those Les Paul records, or maybe Chuck Berry. Well, anybody can part out Chuck Berry. But if you were at that spot, and you heard that, and you went, okay, time to mow more lawns and make sure I get accepted to college. This is, no, I needn't bother. But if you were 14 and about to be poisoned on testosterone, yep, that was the one that took you right down the path.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, and I speak from experience, because a few years prior to that, Al DiMeola with, jazz guitarist with Race with the Devil on Spanish Highway, just made me take it to the pawn shop, get rid of it, give up, move on. Ain't going to happen.
I needn't embarrass myself anymore.
Right.
Well, let's talk about a dry political subject that matters before I get on to guys that aren't dead.
Okay.
Today in the New York court system, Edgar that wanted to marry Bruce and Violet that wanted to marry Butch, the one that smokes the cigar when she rolls the stroller. Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
That's a cheap shot.
Yeah, it is, but that's okay.
But, well, I live...
We're all family here, and we know we're just funning.
Well, yeah, and I lived in a neighborhood that I had to get used to that, because I lived in southeast Portland for a while, a long time, a great time. And I thought turkey baster baby was a joke. But I found out real quickly that first sunny day in late April, early May, when those two women came by with that stroller, that it wasn't a joke. But in the state of New York, based on the evil, horrid, disgusting efforts of George Pataki, a court in New York disallowed that. And
yeah,
one of the references was we shouldn't have a gay couple fostering a child. We shouldn't have a same-sex couple fostering a child. And in the state of New York, remember how...
Children are better off in orphanages and foster homes than they are with loving gay parents. That's the bottom line, isn't it?
Exactly. That wasn't said in 1946. It wasn't said in 1966. It was said in 2006. And it comes weeks after the state of Arkansas said a loving same-sex couple can indeed do well by a child. So that suddenly, based on Republican appointments, a court in New York is 50 or 75 years behind Arkansas?
Well, yeah, and the question arises, is it okay if we call the freaks on that New York court activist judges? Because anybody
Bob, I'm sorry. They want to go back to the 1770s, so they are good, solid, just straight-ahead jurists.
Yeah, constitutional jurists, exactly.
You got it, bro.
No, it makes me crazy because, in my little book, David, refusing to apply the Constitution of the United States to each and every citizen thereof, which this New York case, it's what it did. That is activist judging of the absolute worst and most disgusting sort.
It's apartheid.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's sexual apartheid. It's apartheid based on what goes on when none of the rest of us have any business watching.
It's based on faith and believing a book that has been translated through six languages. All right, maybe it's only five.
Let me run a hypothetical past you, David, because you're good at sort of catching me when I'm about to run off and go all stupid.
I'm not sure I'm that good, though.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how, and I hate phrases like the gay community, welcome to Gayville, and it's halfway between hetero and asexual city. But how can the gay community creatively deal with this issue? Can we have a sort of a coalition? What if I think about the Reverend Donald Wildman when I think about things like this, and I think about how the American Family Association would respond to it. What if, just hyperpathetical-ating here? What if?
This is going to be a hyperventilated question?
Yes, this is a hyperventilated question. What if a gay man A and gay woman B, okay, we got gay man A and gay man B, and they're madly in love with each other and they want to spend the rest of their lives together, okay?
All right, well, wait a second. You said gay man A and gay man B?
Yeah, gay man A and gay man B, and they'd like to get married, but they're victims of sexual apartheid in the United States.
Got it.
And gay woman A and gay woman B would like to get married and contribute to society and, work on the flower beds in front of the house and paint the picket fence, that kind of thing.
Could we be headed toward these four people making a real estate agreement on a duplex?
Well, it kinda. Let's see. Gay man marries gay man A marries gay woman A. Gay man B marries gay woman B, and everything's street legal. Then they execute documents in each other's favor as to benefits and yada, 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 and everything goes and it's, duly to their heirs and assigns forever, but, within the laws of the United States. And you have just circumvented the entire protection of marriage. Because the two gay women are going to live together, two gay men are going to live together. Do you see where I'm going? Does this make any sense? I'm trying to get outside the box on this.
Well, it's just a marriage like Rush Limbaugh had. What's the big deal, Bob?
Oh, Lord, you can cut through it, can't you?
Well, I wasn't there for the Gordian knot, but I'm willing to take an axe to damn near anything, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm told in the chat room that gay man B goes by Aunt B.
that Kenny wear 4-inch pumps with small, with spike heels. That's the truth.
Now, see, we're taking it down a road I didn't mean for it to go down, but I didn't say that either.
Let's get back to wonderful. All right, wait a minute. I see 6:30 on my little computer.
Screen. Don't sweat it. Don't sweat it. We're rolling. We're in the middle of a conversation here.
All right, let's go. I'm going to go right to the punchline. If anybody in North America thinks Ken Lay is dead, I got some land and a bridge and a couple of great automobiles and some stock deals in Nigeria I want to talk to you about. He ain't dead.
Is he risen?
He never died. You know anything about the town? He died in, quote, his vacation home in Aspen, Colorado.
Okay, help me. Okay, keep working.
You know anything about Aspen, Colorado?
I am just dirt ignorant on Aspen, Colorado.
And you won't know anybody that knows anything about Aspen, Colorado. And the only reason I do is that the founder of a company that I work for helped put that town on the map in the 30s. It is the enclave of the super, super duper, beyond all expectation, Donald Trump level rich people. You can't even drive through Aspen, Colorado without your New York Stock Exchange ID that you're worth. You know, millions don't get you there. You got to be worth billions. If anybody is going to fake a death anywhere in the world, and you're insanely wealthy, you know, and way down in the list of things about Ken Lay and Enron, there's a $70 million loan. And in the rounding and in all the little things, never mind all the rest of it, but there's $70 million that nobody knows where it is. And they're just kind of shrugging their shoulders. Well, you know, that's way down the list because the year that relating to his finances and we can't find $70 million, he sold $200 million worth of Enron stock. Well, you know, the 70 doesn't. What I'm telling you is if a guy was going to fake a death and somebody was going to put a log in a casket, it would be in the arguably most friendly rich person enclave in the world. And who announced his death? His minister? Oops. You know, it's all just as funny as it can be, and I'm sorry. It's a pure conspiracy theory. I fully expect either Ric Flair or Bobby the Brain to jump on board and be part of it. But I don't care. I don't believe that man's dead. And today the state of Texas says, well, he's dead. He never made it to sentencing. And the state of Texas has laws on the books. If you don't complete the process, we just consider trial never. We don't process.
It never happened.
The action never happened in as much as it ain't completed. So there's nothing on Ken Lay's record to say he's a bad man. And I'm hoking it up.
There ain't nothing hokey about what you just said.
But the words are right. I guarantee you, it's not the right time for me to bet any kind of big money on anything, but I would bet $100 that he's not dead.
You know, there's good reason to actually posit that theory. I was going to suggest that this was all, and I mentioned this in the chat room a few minutes ago, David, this is also very Roman, because back in the days of empire, and what have we now but empire, back in the days of empire, when you had fallen into Caesar's bad graces, if you were executed, you lost everything and your family lost everything. Period. It all went to Caesar. Now, if on the other hand you climbed into a warm tub of water and opened your wrists and politely bled to death, then your widow kept all of your assets, your children got their inheritances, you kept the villa down by the Bay of Naples at Herculaneum or whatever. And it was considered an honorable way out.
Mafioso capos are that brave. Ken Lay's a stinking, ground-crawling weasel. He's not that courageous. Would he drop $1 million to a doctor, and would he drop another $1 million to a couple of other people, and would he find a guy that could sell him a 163-pound log to put in a casket and figure out a way for it not to roll around You bet your ass.
Cremation, man.
Was he?
I don't know. I mean, if that's the route, that's the route I go if I'm going to work this. But yeah, would the county coroner in what is that, Eagle County, Colorado?
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever it is, would the county coroner take $1 million to dummy up a death certificate?
You bet he would.
Would a doctor in Aspen take $1 million?
Well, to give you an idea about the history of Aspen, Colorado, it was a railroad stop and not much else. Three or four very prominent, extremely prominent, ultra-successful Chicago businessmen were looking for another place to go in the off-season, go when it was a time to do something else, a special place. One of those men was Leo G. Shainhoffen, the founder of Container Corporation of America. And he wanted something that reminded him of what his grandfather had told him about in the Bavarian Alps that he had heard about as a kid growing up in Chicago. And in riding around, looking around, he thought the vista was wonderful. And he decided he and his three cronies would put their roots down in the 30s in Aspen, Colorado. And when they got there, it was a water tank, three saloons, and a corral. And it went from there. And they poured money into it to create their little enclave for the intensely, insanely, disgustingly wealthy. For 70 years, that town has had as its largest single source of income what the super rich wanted to give it, such that the super rich could be anything they wanted to be, whatever they wanted to be it, and never have to worry about it.
You know, you're making rather a compelling case, David. Any black helicopters around the house?
No, not today. No, it's a great day here today. You know, the roof's not leaking, the air conditioning's working, everything's fine.
Tinfoil helmet?
No, but I have been studying some Chesapeake Bay tidal charts. The true relationship to sewer number 66K14.
And I bet you got a batch of Aunt Eunice's old time peanut brittle going on the cook stove right now, right?
And I'm
that's Aunt Eunice peanut brittle cook stove.
And the cook, and I'm thinking about some of Sister Julia's barbecue sauce later.
Later?
Oh, much later.
Okay, just checking. David, thank you so much.
Oh, Bob, I need to get out of the way. Time for real callers.
No, this was as real as it gets because, I don't know, we're going to have to talk about this a little bit more. It gets kind of compelling.
Just keep remembering brown contact. Hair implant, look for a guy that's 5'10", 163, toothy grin.
He'll be standing next to the train platform holding a newspaper under his left arm.
Yeah, but he won't want to talk to you. I'm trying to teach him the northern accent as we speak.
Later, David. Have a good evening. Bye now. Well, you know, that's got to be driving the supercomputers at AT&T and Verizon and Bell South and the NSA absolutely bats the stuff crazy.
Yeah.
Woo, close one. So it's 21 minutes before the hour. We need to sneak into a break. When we come back, let's stay with Ken Lay for a minute. It's worth discussing. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
Melting polar ice was a dirty look. Shrinking glaciers, a nudge. Then dying coral reefs pushed us, hard. Rising ocean temperatures and extreme weather, an uppercut. Then record-breaking heat waves hit us right where it hurts. Has it occurred to anyone that maybe the Earth is trying to get our attention?
We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. To find out how, go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into E-Cycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
Howdy, this is Baxter Black, and if you're like me, you're concerned that the environment we enjoy today may not be around for our children and grandchildren. All the new technology in the world can't create more sky over our heads or new oceans. The Earth's natural resources, fresh water, land, and even the air we breathe are limited. Voluntary family planning improves the health of women and their children. It also helps slow population growth, which is good for our planet. So help ensure that people everywhere have access to the information and services they need to plan their families and help build a healthy future for us all. Population Action International is working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
Underneath the clock, carry an umbrella, no need to talk. The man and the humbug hiding in the fog will be watching. Get yourself a ticket, go through the gate. It's 7:45 precisely, don't be late. If anybody follows, don't hesitate, keep on walking. I take the night train to Munich, rumbling down the track. After half an hour in the restaurant car, look for the conductor and there will be a faint tunic, a paper underneath the sun. Then you gotta pray that he doesn't look away, or you'll never, never, never come back.
It's about a quarter before the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. I'm sorry, all that secret stuff David was talking about put Agnes and me in mind of that tune. It's called Night Train to Munich. Al Stewart from a disc from a few years back, called Between the Wars. And of course, you know, Al Stewart's a genius. I think he's kind of an acquired taste, though. But that's just perfect. Now, Ken Lay, why would you sit back and wonder if Ken Lay was actually dead? Because, it wasn't much over 24 hours before or after the notice of his passing that we found out that under the Fifth Circuit, now don't walk away, this isn't boring law talk, okay? Under the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals standing precedent, Ken Lay's conviction got erased by his death. By dying before the conviction could become final, Ken Lay was no longer even so much as charged with a crime. He wasn't charged. He wasn't convicted. The history books will not be able to say that he was convicted of ripping off people to the tune of billions of dollars. You know, George Bush's best buddy. Because he died. What else does that mean? Wait for it. It means that the case is not just dismissed. Everything associated with the case, poof, gone, flash paper. Like what happens when the cops run into a bookmaking operation, all the bets are written on flash paper and gone, don't exist. It's like the defendant was never even indicted. Okay, so that means he died a man with a clear conscience and a clear record. But wait, there's more. All the money? Well, the shareholders that Lay ripped off in Enron, they had a lawsuit pending against him. And an out-and-out conviction of Kenneth Lay would have made the forfeiture action a done deal. It would have proven, it would, because, you know, a criminal conviction is done beyond a reasonable doubt, okay? A forfeiture in a civil matter only requires, what, a preponderance of the evidence, you know, 50% plus 0.0001. Which is a much lower standard than beyond a reasonable doubt. Therefore, the case for forfeiture would be proven in the conviction. But the conviction disappeared. Poof. Gone. Flash paper. Guess what just happened to the forfeiture? Poof. Gone. Flash paper. Mrs. Lay keeps the money. The Lay family keeps the money. Those missing millions that are squirreled away in trusts and annuities and life insurance proceeds, they're all the Lay family's. Every last nickel, and the people that Ken Lay helped to defraud and rip off, well, frankly, as of today, they can go pound sand up their butts for all the court cares, or all the Lay family cares, or all the Bush Justice Department cares, because you got to remember, this was a federal case. This wasn't some, you know, this wasn't the Randy Travis or Earl down in Austin bringing a state case against Tom DeLay, Sunshine. No, no, no. This was the federal Justice Department. This case was brought under the aegis of the Attorney General, who in this case happens to be Alberto Gonzalez, a Texas insider and also an old friend of Kenny Boy Lay's. Do you think that there's weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth in the Justice Department tonight? Well, you know, maybe among the career lawyers that just absolutely busted their rumps trying to bring this sleazy crook who directed people who made jokes about putting the screws to grannies in California over natural gas bills and electricity bills. The career lawyers are probably disheartened. They feel a little bit like they have just had everything ripped out from under them. But Alberto Gonzalez is as happy a man as exists in the United States today because he has made his boss happy, and his boss is George Bush. That family doesn't do anything without a reason. And whether Ken Lay is dead or is presently undergoing profound appearance-altering face transplant surgery on some South Pacific island hospital location, either way, the little people who got ripped off stay ripped off. And that makes the Bushes happy, because that puts little people where they're supposed to be. I don't just do things. I don't just loathe the Bush family for no reason whatsoever. I don't just loathe the Lays for no reason whatsoever. You know, go to, what is it, thesmokinggun.com? Go there. I imagine it's still there in their archives. There's 50 pages of little love notes, so to speak, between Dear Leader and Kenny Boy. And George, I think I met him once. Met him? No, I wouldn't use met. Go over, you know, near the very top of BartCop.com, the issue from yesterday. I think it's still up today. There's a one line and a link, four words. And it's got Bart's signature little hot graphic by it. And it starts with the word Bush. And, you know, that's about the same as, he met Kenny Boy. Such a meeting. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Andrew is calling from New York. Andrew, welcome to the show. Thank you.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm okay.
Yeah. Ken Lay's doing well, too, huh? Family. Somebody's doing well.
Well, one way or the other, he's somewhere warm. It's either hell or Tahiti. I haven't decided yet.
I think he's somewhere warm. I don't think he had to go nasty to either kill himself, and he had too much money to die. I mean, look at Cheney. He's walking around with a tin can heart. That just goes to show you, when you got a lot of money, you can, you know, live a little bit longer. So I'm not buying it. I mean,
he had the money to go to the number one heart hospital in the country is the Cleveland Clinic.
Yeah, and just like you said, those guys get checkups because they want to live as long as possible.
Yeah.
So they can spend that money. So I'm not even buying that. That's hogwash.
Well, you know, all we got to do is, I wouldn't love to have a staff, Andrew, and have a video there at the Lay funeral.
Oh, geez.
And watch and get video of the weeping Mrs. Lay. And then see if maybe the next trip is to the, well, I mean, it's like the Bushes. Remember the day that they buried their little 3-year-old daughter? They went golfing.
I tell you like this. This is how it's going to go down. If Ken Lay did fake his death or whatever, which I believe, he'll probably end up getting some kind of surgery or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And he'll probably turn around and go right back and marry his wife at a later date.
Yeah, I mean, this is turning into that John Travolta movie. What was it, Face Off?
Swordfish, wasn't it? Was it Swordfish?
I thought it was Face Off.
Oh, Face Off? I know Swordfish had a fake death scene in it. I don't know. It's just like, I know I don't buy it.
Well, I feel paranoid for even suggesting stuff like that.
I feel paranoid, but it's like, you can't put nothing past them, you know? It's just, that's just the way they are. I mean, they're a bunch of cowards. You think he would, you know...
Well, dig this language. This is the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals case law language that will be relied on. This is a quote from a case. Despite what may have been proven at trial, the trial is deemed not to have taken place.
Because he didn't get sentenced.
Right. Thus, at least in the eyes of the criminal court, the defendant is no longer a wrongdoer and has not defrauded, or damaged anyone.
Oh, goodness gracious. That's just great. That's great. Beautiful.
So, beautiful. So this puts the Securities and Exchange Commission, this puts them behind the eight ball.
Yeah, they can't do nothing. They're in the
right. And the lays, if he's dead and in the dirt, then it becomes obvious that there was a reason for it, and it gives a lot of us a reason to wonder if he is, because the money stays right where they wanted the money to stay.
Yep, that's right. And they get a little bit more off the insurance policies to boot.
Oh, sure. I mean, no, this guy wasn't running around without an insurance policy.
Yeah. Probably had gobs of it,
I'd be interested in finding out what...
He probably bought up a lot of it last week.
Yeah, very likely. And, these are all things that are legitimate topics for investigation. Unfortunately, I don't think Bullwinkle's baby sister over at MSNBC will be doing, exposés on Ken Lay's widow.
No, and the mere fact that Bush tries to come off and says, he doesn't know him, blah, 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 when there's documented evidence, books been written about it, there's papers out there, there's information dating back 30-some-odd years. And for them to sit up there and Tony Snow to say, blah, 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 he's just an acquaintance. It's just like me telling my wife, you're just an acquaintance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, we're friends.
Yeah, we're just friends. I met him once. I met her once. Yeah, at a wedding. Please.
I know. I wish there was some journalism going on in this country.
Oh, there is none. I mean, there's some here and there, but it's, a lot of it's underground. I mean, it's getting out with the help of the Internet for how long that's going to last, the whole net neutrality thing. But, I mean...
Oh, you remind me. I'm going to finally get around this evening, Andrew, I'm glad you mentioned it, to playing the Senator Ted Stevens audio. I mean, this is one of those, go ahead and pop the popcorn, crack the beers, the sodas, get the glass of iced tea, put out the cat, sit back, relax, and prepare to just hurt yourself laughing.
All right. Okay. Was this audio today?
No, it's a few days old.
Oh, okay.
This is Ted Stevens' comments on net neutrality.
Oh, okay. I think I read them a couple of days ago.
Yeah, you probably did read it. If you haven't heard the audio, though, you haven't lived.
Yeah, they shovel so much stuff out there. It's just you read something one day, and then it's okay. And in the back of the mind, you have this, that, and the other thing. But you're trying to deal with the crab of the day,
Yeah. It gets tough.
Yeah. The crab du jour.
Yeah, I still got audio from Condi Rice from last week that I haven't run.
Yeah.
It gets difficult because they try to send it at us so fast and so furiously.
Yep.
That we can't keep up.
Yeah, big lies.
Yeah.
I mean, what did I saw Peter King on, he was on Channel 2 or something last Sunday. And he tried to come off Democrats were weak on terror and yada-da-yada-da and all this stuff. And I'm he said this one thing. He said, the World Trade Center was bombed back on Clinton's watch, but we never caught those guys who bombed that.
Liar.
Straight up liar. Just lying.
Dudes are in prison.
On a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
I was oh, my God, he did not say that.
Oh, yes, he did. Oh, yes, he did. But the thing is, you caught it. And 99% of the conservatives in America went, that's right, Bill Clinton, actually, Bill Clinton flew the plane.
Yeah.
And parachuted out. That's why he got to New York before Bush.
Yeah, he had the rider truck. Oh,
God almighty.
Plates on it.
Makes you crazy, doesn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, pretty much.
Hang in there. Wait till you hear this audio.
Okay.
All right, talk to you soon.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, top of the hour news coming. Remind me, Agnes, remind me. We're going to play the Ted Stevens. I mean, you want to? This is a public service announcement for not huffing glue. Okay, that's what the Ted Stevens audio is. Yeah, Agnes didn't even think it was real. So we'll be back after the news. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yeah. This is the Quality News Network. In the Gaza Strip, at least 12 Palestinians were killed as Israeli troops advanced near populated towns. One Israeli soldier was killed, the first fatality since the offensive began a week ago. In Iraq, near the holy city of Najaf, 12 people died and 40 were injured in a suicide bombing at a Shiite Muslim shrine. Many of the dead and injured were Iranian pilgrims. At the White House, President Bush is urging diplomacy and a united international response to resolve the North Korean missile standoff. He says he has spoken with the leaders of China, South Korea, Japan, and Russia over the past few days. In Mexico City, it appears the conservative ruling party candidate has won Sunday's close presidential election. Felipe Calderon has an insurmountable lead in the vote count. His liberal rival refuses to accept the election results and has begun to challenge them in court. Out of the 41 million votes cast, fewer than 200,000 votes separate the two candidates. In New Jersey, lawmakers have reportedly reached an agreement on a state budget. One official says it includes a sales tax increase that would raise $1 billion a year and help close the state's $4.5 billion budget gap. The deal comes after a six-day government shutdown. In Austin, Texas, a federal judge ruled that the state Republican Party must keep Tom DeLay's name on the November ballot, even though the former House Majority Leader dropped his reelection bid and resigned his seat. President Bush will begin a series of formal news conferences outside of Washington beginning on Friday in Chicago. A White House official says this will allow the president to listen to people from different parts of the country and get a sense of what is on their minds. And President Bush celebrates his 60th birthday today. He says he doesn't feel old. In New York, the state's highest court ruled that gay couples cannot be married under state law. Additionally, the court said this restriction is not a violation of the state's constitution. Also in Georgia, the state Supreme Court reinstated a gay marriage ban that had won voter approval in 2004. The Space Shuttle Discovery linked up with the International Space Station today. The visit is expected to last for a week or more. And a new federal report says that high levels of carbon dioxide are altering the chemistry of the world's oceans and could be harming the animals living there. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is coming up next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Without admitting wrongdoing, Merrill Lynch has agreed to a nearly $30 million settlement with Enron that will settle charges that it helped the company commit fraud. Autopsy results on former Enron founder Kenneth Lay, who died of a massive heart attack yesterday, revealed that the 64-year-old suffered from heart disease. Lay was awaiting sentencing for fraud and conspiracy when he died at his vacation home in Aspen, Colorado. In Washington, an FBI computer consultant faces up to a year in prison after he pleaded guilty to computer hacking charges. The consultant allegedly used free software he found on the internet to obtain the secret passwords of the FBI director. Free Coca-Cola employees are facing charges of stealing confidential information from their company and trying to sell it to rival PepsiCo for $1.5 million. The three suspects were arrested yesterday after assistance from Pepsi and the FBI. GM's board will meet tomorrow to discuss a possible alliance with Nissan and Renault. The idea was proposed by billionaire investor Kurt Kerkorian, who owns the largest share in GM. Certified pre-owned cars are rising in popularity. According to statistics from J.D. Power and Associates, they now make up 41% of all used car dealership sales. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $75.14 a barrel. And taking a look at Wall Street, the Dow is up 73 points, the Nasdaq up 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Bramoff.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Okay, so here in a few minutes, we're going to listen to the Senator Ted Stevens' bad day to quit huffing gasoline audio. But I couldn't, you know, listening to the fine newscast from our friends at Quality News Network, there it was. I mean, there's your proof. I mean, we're conspiracy theorists. That's what we are. Because the autopsy today showed that he died of a massive coronary. Because he had a massive coronary, and massive coronaries cause massive coronaries. There's nothing underhanded there. I mean, he's not going to be not convicted, or not. And the wife gets to stay really, really rich and live in Aspen, in Houston, and maybe Bell Harbor, and possibly Singapore, maybe Tahiti. She's a widow. Okay, cut her some slack. This is a segment of the program, however, called Ask a Nurse, which would happen to be Agnes. Long before she decided to dedicate her life, she's a cat, nine lives, okay? Now, long before she decided to dedicate her life to chasing the little Kincaids around the mansion, my lovely wife was a nurse. And I have, dear, you did ER stuff, and you've done surgery stuff, and you worked for a cardiologist, and you've done hospice, and you've seen death. And so I got a question for you, nurse.
All right. What would that be?
Is it possible to induce a heart attack in a 64-year-old guy?
Oh, sure. Potassium chloride.
Potassium chloride.
That's right.
Hard to get your hands on?
Oh, no.
Isn't that the stuff that's in that Morton salt substitute?
Sure is.
And what does it do?
It stimulates the heart and puts it right into AFib.
AFib? Well, I mean, this
atrial fibrillation.
Oh, okay. This is the Bush administration. AFib? Lots of fibs.
Big fib.
So, and atrial fibrillation does what? I mean, that's...
The heart just...
Boom.
Yeah. It just stutters, basically.
Pop.
Yeah.
Pop goes the weasel.
If he had a pre-existing heart condition, yeah.
How about nicotine?
Sure. OD on nicotine.
So, if potassium chloride had caused you to go into...
Large quantities of caffeine.
How would you deliver this here potassium chloride there, nursey?
Food, boil it down, inject it, lots of different ways. Why are you asking me this, especially over over this? I really don't want to tell people this.
I can't help thinking. Again, I don't want to get all Jeff Rentz, okay? There's no chemtrails involved or, you know, any of that stuff. But I can't help wondering, because during this trial, we saw the footage of Kenlay walking in, Kenlay walking out. There were no continuances because Ken wasn't feeling very good.
There
he appeared to be the picture of health. God knows he had enough money to have the best health care on earth.
True.
And so he gets convicted, and before he can get sentenced and get his money taken away from him, pop goes the weasel.
Well, if they have a personal physician, especially if she's friends with him, he comes to the house, he declares him DOA, gives a relative time, takes him to the morgue, and it all goes away.
Yeah,
that's
little million-dollar handshake to the coroner, just like David said.
Sure. Well, usually the attending physician... Write up the paperwork.
Could Kenlay reasonably have suicided himself with this potassium chloride or any other means?
With his money? No. I don't think that he would.
But no, could no, it could
sure. Okay. Sure, he could. Anyone could.
Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. Well, I had to ask.
But so. It seems strange that his affairs were so neatly in place.
But then again, you know, Agnes, dear, when you've got that kind of money, you pay people to make sure that your affairs are neatly in place.
But usually when you have that kind of money, the people who keep your affairs neatly in place are being paid large, copious amounts of money.
But if you did the potassium chloride thing, wouldn't your electrolytes just be on the autopsy?
Possibly.
So you got to buy off the pathologist?
Yeah, well, I mean, there are other avenues to go that probably wouldn't be traceable, but...
Well, you know, I was talking with our good friend Mark Levine earlier today, and he said, I can't help thinking back to the Clinton years when Richard Mellon Scaife was buying newspapers solely for the purpose of publishing stories, things like Bill Clinton killed Vince Foster. And there was that Clinton Chronicles video that Jerry Falwell sold that accused you. I mean, and there's Ann Coulter out there telling stories about how Bill and Hillary decorated their, literally, I remember this, decorated their Christmas tree with condoms. And there were the stories published about, you know, Bill Clinton has an illegitimate black baby in a trailer park in Arkansas. This all happened. It was all orchestrated. It was all put out there. And yet, you know, this goes down.
And nothing said?
And because I'm a liberal and I'm progressive, what's his name? Detective Briscoe from Law and Order would be looking at his partner going, ah, this one stinks.
Okay, well, follow this. He supposedly had a pre-existing heart condition, right?
He didn't. I mean, that's what I'm saying. There were no continuances of the trial for Ken Lay to go to the Cleveland Clinic and get catheterized or whatever.
If there was something there that he took for fluid retention, things like that, there are medications that they give that is a potassium supplement. And gee whiz, you know, his grieving widow says he took too much. And that's what induced the heart attack.
You know, we got six different ways from Sunday we can go on this. I mean, there's murder, there's suicide, there's a Bush family mob hit. You know, you remember the delightful little bit of satire from our good friend Eugene Feinerman last night, you know, with the obituary CC'd to the late Jeffrey Skilling, the late Jack Abramoff, and the soon-to-be really late Scooter Libby. You remember that? That's a little innocent, harmless fun. But... it's a lot more likely that there's some face rearrangement surgery going on in the South Pacific right now than that Elvis is living up in Michigan with Jim Morrison. It just stinks. I hate seeing justice perverted, and whether he's dead or not, the ultimate outcome of this is that justice has been, will be perverted. And a whole bunch of people who were literally forced from... I mean, what's the old song lyric from That's Life? You're flying high in April, shot down in May. That's the entirety of everyone who... Do you remember as little bits and pieces sort of dripped out of the Enron scandal, we found out that the nature of the stock purchase program for employees of Enron was such that they were not allowed to ever sell the stock until they had owned it for a certain period of time, that they couldn't unload, they couldn't shed their stock when it started to go in the tank and get money out of it, that they had to sit there for the ride while Kenny Boy and Skilling and Andrew Fastow and all those dirty, filthy, rotten criminals screamed sell until their broker's ears bled. You remember that? Sure, because you pay attention. And so, you know, I guess, you know, I'm a conspiracy theorist. Hear. I'm up for it. No, he's not alive. He's not in Tahiti having face surgery. He's dead. But if he's dead, it is a death that is far too convenient for my liking. Did Mrs. Lay murder him? I don't know. Given the fact that at some point in time, some prosecutor was likely to walk up to Ken Lay and say, you know, you're about to be sentenced there, Bubba. You ever seen it? Soap on a rope. That's what this is. You're about to be sentenced. We'd like to ask you some questions so that we could employ the federal sentencing guidelines to so you might have a downward departure in your sentencing. And what would those questions be asked about? You know what those questions would be asked about. Who sat? You know, call the parent. I will wear any hat any right-wing freak wants to call me as long as I can get questions answered like this. Who sat on Cheney's secret energy policy task force? Who helped put together the membership on that task force? Who was initially slated to be the Secretary of Energy in the first Bush administration? Who put together the meeting at the Beverly Hills Hotel or the Hollywood Hilton or whatever the hell it was that Arnold Schwarzenegger attended? The answer to every one of the questions that I've just put forward is the same person, and the person is Ken Lay. Now, let's say there's just one lone federal prosecutor that's willing to go off the reservation and ask questions like this. Suddenly, Ken Lay's death, even if it's all just a big coinky-dinky, Ken Lay's death looks extremely beneficial to the killers of the Bush administration. No doubt about it. Do you want to take a break, Agnes? Okay, that's okay. I got to be a better lip reader. Sometimes I think she's calling me names. I don't know. We'll be back after the break. Your phone calls are welcome. 877-443-2366. 877-4 head on. This is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Traffic. All this traffic. When will it end? Doesn't it seem like there are more cars on the road every day?
As our population continues to grow, our daily commute isn't the only thing changing. Rapid population growth around the world threatens our quality of life in other ways. It endangers the environment, economic development, even the future health of our children. U.S. support for voluntary family planning programs worldwide improves everyone's quality of life and helps slow population growth. Find out how you can help increase support for these crucial programs. We're Population Action International, working to promote voluntary family planning around the world. Visit us at www.populationaction.org. That's populationaction.org.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Secretary Rumsfeld has said that if civil war should break out in Iraq, he's hopeful that Iraqi forces can handle it. If they can't, sir, are you willing to sacrifice American lives to keep Iraqis from killing one another?
I think the first step is to make sure a civil war doesn't break out, and that's why we're working with the leaders there in Baghdad to form a unity government.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Just a jump to the left.
All righty then, 21 and a half minutes after the hour and straight to the phones, our good friend Peter joins us from Tallahassee, Florida. Hey, Peter, welcome to the show.
Dude, I'm rolling on the floor laughing. That introduction music, I mean, if I ever get my own radio show, I want to use that as my intro.
Well, you certainly may.
It was just wonderful. I don't know whether to talk to you or just keep dancing.
Well, we can fire the music up again.
My schedule lately has been nuts, and I've been missing a lot of the talk shows. And people have probably said this, but just in case, it's on my mind, getting on my nerves. You know, this Ken Lay, he's very intelligent, very crafty, very artful, very considering and considerate individual. He planned the largest scandal and ripoff of a corporation in the history of the world,
yes,
as I could tell. And if you think for 1 minute that he did not plan for getting caught, yeah, I mean, it's just so obvious. Of course he...
You've always got a getaway car.
There was a plan B, honey. There was a plan B. Of course it was arranged. I don't think that man is dead any more than I think I am. That he is alive and well with a face transplant living in Brazil. I got to tell you, he may never see his wife again, or they may meet in rendezvous at the South Pole. Who knows? But that man is no more dead. The idea is just laughable to me.
Standing down on the beach at Rio saying, free at last, free at last.
Yes, exactly. And there was no talk about him with a history of severe heart disease.
Not a peep.
And there's no talk about suing the physicians for getting it all wrong and missing all the symptoms. These things are, they're precursors to a massive heart attack. Doctors are well aware of it. That man was scanned.
We got PSAs about it, Peter.
Of course, he's been scanned and probed and imaged. And
when you're that rich, you get gone over by doctors like a prize hog.
Of course, he was taking medication to prevent hangnails, for crying out. For one moment, he had a surprise. I don't believe it. I don't believe it for 1 minute. Just can't take it.
Well, I mean, I don't want to seem all paranoid, but it's David makes a compelling case. If you're going to do it. Do it in Austin or Aspen.
We have Aspen too. Do it in Aspen. Yeah, yeah. He could have even had a body double run into a tree for that matter. But I guess a heart attack. It was all pre-planned, so I doubt they wanted to change.
Well, heart attacks are easy because there's not a wreck scene to clean up.
This is absolutely true. And God knows what sort of Agus was talking about some chemical compounds that would induce it, but Lord knows what else is out there that is so secret that Agnes would never have a clue, or any other normal doctor or nurse background. This is CIA. That man had contacts that you can't begin to conceive of.
Yes.
You know,
he had contacts with the Bush family, and the Bush family includes a former director of the CIA.
Yeah.
I mean, enough?
Enough. Another thing I wanted to get into was something that's been, I've been thinking about lately, and it's a clue as to the mindset of these conservatives who are just so hard set against anything progressive and anything that that looks like it's going to give anybody any freedom. I'm not so sure that they're so much conservative as they are insecure, and I'll tell you where I got this from.
Okay.
I was talking to a woman who was talking about her voting history, and she was talking about years and years ago when she was a college student. She voted for George Wallace. And of course, my jaw dropped to the ground, and she went up, you know, kept it concealed a little bit. I kind of wanted to hear this story. But the way she explained it is that when George Wallace won her over is when he was talking in his speeches going about on about these intellectuals.
Oh, God, yes.
Yes, it almost seemed to be some sort of a feeling of inadequacy. You go up through school, it's always the sports, the jocks, but everybody kind of knows in the back of their head, you know, that it's the smart ones, it's the guys that are making straight A's, it's the nerdy ones that are really, you know, they're jealous of that, even though they make fun of it, which is probably a lot of fun.
Right, and they call, you know, they call names, and you're exactly right, Peter, because, God knows the Republican Party will not own up to it, but the spiritual father of so-called conservatism is not Barry Goldwater.
Yeah.
It's George Wallace.
Well, this is absolutely...
The Southern strategy that was put together by Kevin Phillips for Richard Nixon was taken straight from George Wallace and precipitated... the need for it was precipitated by George Wallace.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
George Wallace, the anti-intellectualism, the know-nothingism, the I'm just regular folksism of the Republican Party.
I love George Bush because he talks like me-ism, that whole thing.
Yeah, well, you know, and you remember during the campaign, who would you? I mean, never mind. There's a war in Iraq. There's a thousand Americans dead. What did we get from the mainstream media? Who would you rather sit down and drink a beer with, John Kerry or George Bush?
Yeah, I remember. I lost three or four gray. I turned three or four more gray hairs over that. But, you know, back in the day, it was okay to be railing against the intellectuals. It was the intellectuals. But now they don't do that anymore. They've switched it over to the word liberal. But all it means is the intellectuals, the smart people, the educated people. And there was a woman in church several weeks ago going on about how it was the educated people that were, how'd she put it? I don't know. Going against the Lord, blah, 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 and not helping the missions and not helping the poor. And it was the poor people that were out there trying to,
Do you remember several months back when I told the story about talking to the car dealer around here who said that we needed to cut the budget for NASA because all they're trying to do is disprove God anyway with all that space stuff?
Well, there you go. That's an excellent symptom of the whole damn malaise, isn't it? Yep, it's the intellectuals. It ain't the queers. It ain't the liberals. It's them damn intellectuals. It's them college-educated intellectuals.
Well, you open up a veritable Pandora's box of debate potential and discussion potential, Peter, because David Horowitz's organization, the Center for the Study of Popular Culture, I think is what it's called. They're sending out, they're doing something we at the Head On Radio Network will never do. They're sending out solicitations saying, please send us a few dollars. We've been sued by a guy that we slandered and he sued us and we got to hire a lawyer and the aim of this organization, I don't know if you've ever followed it, they claim that American universities are filthy with dirty communist Osama loving liberal Democrats who won't teach good conservative. Well, there's a reason, Peter, because conservative politics are not based on anything approaching science. There's no such thing as conservative mathematics. There's no such thing as conservative history. There's no such thing as conservative sociology. There's no such thing as conservative biology or geology or conservative French.
Whoa, tell us what you really think, Bob.
There's a reason the damn things are called the liberal arts, Peter.
You go, man. And you know this whole thing about the homosexuals. You know, remember the other day you were talking about fighting words?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think they're willing to win the war on abortion, and they've lost the war on Adam and Eve and the dinosaurs and the evolution. They've lost that particular battle, and they're losing battle after battle. But I think they have drawn a line in the sand. That's where you get into the fighting words with them, is when you get into the homosexual issue. Because, by God, they're going to get away with all this stuff, but they ain't going to get away with promoting these queers. I think that's the fighting word.
Well, it's the agenda. You know, I used to have a copy of the homosexual agenda, Peter. And, you know, frankly, it looked pretty fun. I mean, there was, you know, the brunch must have been just delicious.
Well, I loved it until I got to the part about doing laundry, washing the car, going to work, fixing breakfast, you know. That part was pretty bad, but, you know, the rest of it seemed rather...
You know, disco at noon? I mean, who can argue?
Well, I do it every day. Keeps me young. Oh, God.
You know, it's out there in the Ethernet somewhere. Somebody's going to have to find it and send it to me, because it's a keeper. Somebody wrote out, you know, and it's timetabled, you know, 2 o'clock, destroy traditional marriage, 2:15, shop for matching monogram towels, you know, 2:30, you know.
Oh, is that a fact?
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah, and even though I'm sure even the dumbest of them may think that it is a little bit humorous, there is also a belief that it is, there's a seed of truth in all of it.
Well, Peter, I can't even carry on a sane conversation. I have tried with anyone who sits there and tells me that two guys who want to pick out monogram towels are a threat to so-called traditional marriage. So-called traditional marriage has only existed for about 100 years.
Oh, yeah, the whole thing doesn't hold water. It's almost as if they think, well, my God, if the queers can get married, then Ethel, she might say, well, oh, my God, I could have had a woman. Ethel's just going to walk out and find herself a damn Lizzie down the biker bar.
Down to the biker bar.
God bless Ethel.
Drinking Jack's beer out of a can.
Yeah, none of it holds water particularly well. It really does.
Well, let's see if I can bring this page up. Our good friend Lottie has found. Yeah, there it is, the homosexual agenda.
Oh, praise God. Lottie can find.
Yeah.
He's good at
it. Yeah, here it is, Peter. 8 a.m., wake up, wonder where you are. 8:01, realize you're lying on 100% cotton sheets of at least a 300 count, so don't panic, you're not slumming.
Okay, yes, yeah, so it's money. You have money. That's the married without kids syndrome.
10:30, hair appointment for low lights and cut, purchase of Aveda anti-humectant pomade.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Alt values. Good day, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 3:33 p.m., assume complete control of the U.S. state and local governments in addition to other nations' governments, destroy all healthy Christian marriages, recruit all children grades kindergarten through 12 into your amoral, filthy lifestyle, secure complete control of the media, starting with sitcoms, molest innocent children, give AIDS to as many people as you can, host a pornographic art exhibit at your local museum, and turn people away from Jesus, causing them to burn forever in hell. 4:10.
Yes.
Time permitting, bring about the general decline of Western civilization and look like you're having way too much fun doing it. 4:30, take a disco nap to prevent facial wrinkles from the stress of world conquest and being so terribly witty.
Oh, well, you know that I do.
I loathe these bigoted SOBs, Peter. I didn't like apartheid in South Africa in the 80s. I came up into consciousness, you know, 6-7 years old, just as integration was taken hold in my hometown in Alabama. And all my life, racism has been a dirty thing. Discrimination has always been a dirty, dirty thing. And you can't get around saying that this is discrimination.
Well, yeah, what it boils down to is treating people as if they did not love. That's the way that slaves were treated. They were treated like animals. The families were separated. The children ripped from their parents and sold, because these people don't love each other. They're just like animals, a little pack. You know, the women, they just have sex. They're just like dogs. You know, So, you know, it's okay to rip the family up. And it's the same logic applies to our gay folk, too. You know, we don't love each other. We don't care about each other. It's just sex. It's some kind of immoral sex act. You know.
Well, and by the way, on the agenda, Peter, 10:30 p.m. Cocktails at a debauched gay bar trying to avoid alcoholic queens who can't navigate a crowd with a lit cigarette in one hand and a stoli in a cheap plastic cup in the other. Make audible remark about how trashy people who still think smoking is acceptable are.
Well, you know, Bob, that's one of the reasons I DJ'd in the gay clubs, to stay out of that.
to stay away from the cigarette and the stoli?
Exactly, and I could just watch it all without getting into traffic. So, yeah, you know, it's good to, you know, you should always be a DJ. If you can't stand the traffic, just DJ.
Well, you know, that's why I love doing the midnight shift on Saturday night at the FM radio station down in Alabama. You know, it was a heck of a lot easier to say, look, I got to work, instead of, you know, having the latest little cheerleader babe turn me down for a date.
Well, I don't know. Well, life's hard for all of us, Bob, what can I tell you?
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I'm honest. but I, you know, I am toying with the idea, and I don't know if I'm going to do it or not, Peter. I'm toying with the idea of trying to get the Reverend Donald Wildman on this program.
Oh, no.
Now, I'll be nice. I will be nice, but I just want to find out, you know, and I'll probably have to, like, stick a tennis ball in Agnes's mouth and duct tape it.
You'll have to be chained in the cellar.
Yeah. I'll have to produce my own show that night.
Yeah.
Because she would just sit over here and spontaneously combust or huff glue or something. You know, next thing I knew, she'd be sounding like Ted Stevens. But... I think the time has come. You know, I'm tired of talking about these people. It is time, and I talk about how we've got to confront them. You know, I guess that means me too, doesn't it?
You're very. I have seen you in action, and you have definitely been through the Baptist Church. I got to tell you, there's not too many tricks you miss in a conversation along that line. Remember the night that guy tried desperately for 20 minutes to tie you to something?
Oh yeah, well,
that was excruciating. You handled it so eloquently. I mean, he was like a mental midget.
Well, see, but that was one of those St. Paul conversations, Peter. And it's worth remembering, as we talk about this business with traditional marriage, that St. Paul himself, if you're into, you know, what that hateful dude
he was
blathered, he's the one that recommended that it would be better if you stayed single and stayed unmarried, because marriage is dirty.
Right.
I mean, he said it. I didn't.
Right. But if you must marry, it's better to do that than to burn.
Right. Exactly. And Mother Church, you know, the holy yada 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 with the House of Whoville hat and the pointy shoes. The church did not even permit marriage to take place inside a church building until the 15th century, because the church deemed marriage entirely too secular, entirely too crass, too profane, and too far from the light of God.
Dude, I didn't know that. How interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, please bring that up when you have the... Have him with this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and back up, you know, there's a portrait hanging in some Orthodox cathedral somewhere, and... The church was actively marrying monks to each other.
Oh yeah, there was a ceremony. It's buried now, but there was a Catholic ceremony for the union of two men.
Yeah, and I mean, we're not talking about they were bowling partners.
No, we're not talking about bowling partners.
Even if the shirts are fabulous, they were not bowling partners.
Right, they were fabulous friends.
Yeah, you know, I remember when David Letterman was talking something about Orville Redenbacher, God rest his soul, and I remember a line from the Letterman show. He said, you know, the little dude that would show up on the commercials with Orville Redenbacher? I remember the younger guy. I remember David Letterman with some one-liner said, that's not his assistant. That's his long-time companion.
How funny. Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I was thinking, do you remember that? Did you see the photographs in the news articles recently with Warren Buffett with that $600,000, you know, have lunch with Warren Buffett bit? He was I kept trying to pick out which one was his lover. you know that man had a hot $500 date.
No. Now you're working on another promo now, Peter.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'll stop. Oh, Lord. Oh, man. Yeah, the world's a strange place, buddy.
Oh, it is. It's twisted and it's mean.
It is mean. It's very mean. Some days I say, dog eat, we're staying home.
It's just too damn mean out there today. You know, the our great big half mastiff, half boxer has decided that she likes to do the show with us, so she's sitting here laying here on the floor as contented as she can be between Agnes and me.
Yeah, how sweet.
And it's as sweet as can be. and you know, I was looking down at her earlier today. I thought, you know, sometimes I think I'd like to be you.
Yeah.
You know, there are no Republican dogs out there.
Yeah, yeah. And if they are, they're the ones that maul children. And,
and they're dealt with summarily.
And they don't stay in their own yard. You know the ones.
Yeah.
They get put to death for the pound. Or, you know, they're always, reprieve my dog, shit me, 12 kids. You've seen the article.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
They're all Republicans.
Well, Peter, thank you so much. Thank you for taking me so many different places. It's like a little road trip.
Yeah, it's Florida. I'm part Disney World. And I'll talk to you later, Bob. I love your show, dude.
All right, thank you, Peter. Agnes has a song picked out just for you.
Oh, cool.
Later. All right, this is Head On. We'll be back. Let's take a break. I'm Bob Kincaid. You want to get in on the fun? 877-443-2366. I'm Bob. Wrong song. Well, I mean, okay, so my mic's still open.
Yes. Let's try this.
I went to a garden party to reminisce with my old friends. A chance to share old memories and play our songs again. When I got to the garden party, they all knew my name. No one recognized me. I didn't look the same. But it's all right now. I learned my lesson well. You see, you can't please everyone, so you got to please yourself.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Workers at AK Steel in Middletown, Ohio, have been locked out of their jobs since March when their last contract expired. No progress has been made since on reaching a new agreement with the company. Now the locked-out workers will vote later this month on whether to stay with their independent union or switch to another union. The United Steelworkers and the International Association of Machinists are both vying to replace the ArmCo Independent Employees Federation. An election has been scheduled by the NLRB July 25th through the 28th.
With all 12 of Atlantic City's casinos shuttering their doors at 8 a.m. Wednesday, tourists are starting to pack their bags and head home. As a result, workers who depend on tips as part of their income are finding themselves temporarily laid off.
They depend on their tips to make it through, you know, through to pay their bills at the end of each month. When there's no patrons spending money, there's no tips. So, I mean, this will have economic impact way beyond whatever 2, 3, or 5 days the casino industry is closed.
Patricia Campos is a legislative representative for Unite Here, the union that represents many of the workers at the Atlantic City hotels. She said that the failure of the New Jersey state legislature to approve a $31 billion budget proposed by Governor John Corzine is all about politics, and workers are the ones suffering because of it.
This is about people's jobs. You know, they can play politics all they want, but when you start playing politics with people's paychecks, they're going to really have a problem in their hands.
The casinos had to close because without a budget, state casino inspectors can't work, and casinos can't operate without inspectors on the job.
The United Steelworkers Union has reached a tentative agreement that could end a 19-month long strike at Ormet in Hannibal, Ohio. About 1,500 workers are affected. The deal still must be approved by the workers. Wage boosts, a signing bonus, and profit sharing are reportedly part of the deal, but the exact details haven't been released pending a vote by USW members at Ormet. The ratification vote is expected to wrap up by the end of the week, complicating the workers' immediate return to work at Ormet, though, is an effort by the company to change its industrial power contract with utility companies.
Here is today's economic report. Can the world economy absorb a crash in the U.S. housing market? That is the big question that billionaire George Soros said the world should be asking. During a speech before the London School of Economics, Soros said that the U.S. housing market has benefited consumers by generating large amounts of spending opportunity through equity. As the housing boom slows, Soros is wondering if, with countries like China financing cheap mass consumption, if the world can withstand a serious drop in the U.S. housing market.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Do you have any idea what going through adolescence during the rise of disco does to the psyche of one human being? Oh, God, somebody find me a Kiana shirt and a leisure suit. 13 minutes before the hour, and, if you want to get on, you know, 877-443-2366. Okay, you know, I think I really have got to put my radio show where my mouth is. So I'm going to try to start seeing about getting the Reverend Donald Wildman on the program. This is, you know, these poor bastards have to spin everything. Because, you know, all of their efforts are getting, you know, will you please send us a small gift if you think our work is worthwhile? And I looked at Agnes and I said, you know, I want to send them one of those little plastic trolls with the fuzzy hair sticking up. You know, here's the small gift you asked for. But they have to spin everything. You know, dear Bob, sometimes fighting the battles of the culture war. You know, these bastards admit that they are at war with us. I'm not at war with them. They're at war with us. You know, sometimes fighting the battles of the culture war results in some victories, and pro-family groups got two today. Rulings issued by the highest courts of New York and Georgia upheld the right of the legislature and the citizenry to define and regulate marriage. The Court of Appeals of New York ruled that the state's constitution does not require yada, 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 yada. So, you know, But they have to, you know, they got to keep their little religion junkies on the string. There's cause to celebrate these two rulings. But this fight is far from over. The high courts of the states of Washington, California, and New Jersey will be making decisions on the issue of same-sex marriage, and no one knows how they'll rule. Plus, federal judges are already getting in on the debate on marriage and family. These institutions will never be safe until the U.S. Constitution is amended to declare that marriage is between one man and one woman. You know, you want to stick a pin in these SOB's balloons? Tell them that the constitutional mandate has to say that marriage is between one man and one woman for life. The U.S. House of Representatives will be taking up the Marriage Protection Act in the near future. So we'll be asking you to contact your congressman or congresswoman at that time. If you think our efforts are worthy, would you please support us with a small gift? Thank you for caring enough to get involved. Yeah, sincerely, Donald E. Wildman. You know, every time I see Wildman, I just have this image of this pasty old freak running around in the woods somewhere. But no, I don't want to. No, the visual's bad enough for me. You don't need it to. But I guess I got to try to get this goober on. Goober says, "Hey, hey to goober." You know, I guess I'm going to have to try to get the Reverend Donald Wildman on, because if I say that they have to be confronted, that means that I have to do the confronting, doesn't it? I suppose so. So I'll try. Because, we'll talk a little bit about this later. Let's go to the phone. Our good friend Sue is calling from the United Kingdom. Sue, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. I have to phone up. You've got this music tonight. I don't know if I'm on my head or my elbow. Oh, it is Van Halen.
Oh.
Tell you about the hair, though.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's gotten a haircut in recent years.
Yeah, well, he must have. I mean, he must be getting on a bit now.
But I hear he can still play. You know, on the other hand, you know, I think David Lee Roth is working at a Burger King somewhere.
Oh, David Lee Roth. I saw him at Donington. I used to have a real thing for David Lee Roth. Boy, could that bloke jump, and could he climb?
Yes, he could. He could. Yeah. He could indeed. But you know. He had a radio show at one point somewhere here in the U.S., and I don't know how that went.
He was just such the perfect showman.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I used to get really hot at that jump video.
You know, maybe this is the part of the program that I turn over to Agnes.
No, I'm sorry, honestly. You know, you've got me going, and then the time warp.
Oh,
with Peter. You know, I mean, I was up ready to do the dance.
And we all know how to do it, don't we?
Yeah, and John Travolta. You know, the Bee Gees, Night Fever, I loved that movie. But, you know, I wasn't a great disco person. I've always been a bit of a rock chick. But I liked the Bee Gees. All that high singing, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, many people forget that they had a career prior to disco. There was some very moving stuff out there. How do you mend a broken heart?
Oh, but there was so much good disco.
Yeah, there was.
There was, but you know, an awful lot of it was pop.
Well, you know, when you got to the point in the disco era where Ethel Merman was releasing the Ethel Merman disco album, complete with the disco version of "There's No Business Like Show Business." I think that really is when disco hit its true nadir.
Oh, yeah, you know, but I mean, we had, who was that bloke? Was it George McRae, I think his name was? Yeah, his wife was supposed to make the song and he made it. Oh, you know, we went through a lot. My husband in the army used to be a DJ. He used to go, you know, DJ and all that. So we used to get all the records, even mm-hmm. the bad ones. But no, I reckon that bloke got knocked off, you know, that lay bloke.
Yeah.
I think it's more likely, you know, I could, you know, sort of go down that.
Well, yeah, this, the thing is, Sue, this is, I mean, I don't know how much American TV you get over there, but this is something that's straight out of an episode of Perry Mason or Matlock or, you
yeah.
know. Yeah, there's not a lot of mystery to it.
I think that he had to go. He knew where too many bodies were buried. And he would have brought too many people into it that didn't want to be brought into it. Very powerful people.
Well, I mean, the Bush family, the Dick Cheney Secret Energy Task Force alone
yeah.
would be enough to earn him, you know, a trip out on the rowboat with Fredo.
Because that sort of thing happens a lot over there, doesn't it? You know, witnesses dying. I mean,
yeah.
witnesses from the Kennedy assassination, you know, died.
Well, you know, under the Bush administration, the United States has been turned into a sort of an endless rerun of The Godfather.
Mm. I mean, you know, if he keeps it up, he's going to start competing with Stalin, I think, you know?
Yeah. And you know, there are those out there, and we've had this conversation on the program from time to time, Sue. There are people who say, you know, I don't think he will leave when it's time for him to go in January of 2009.
No, I reckon they're gonna try and hang on. Something's gonna happen to make it, you know, suspend elections or whatever.
The plans are already out there. They've talked about them publicly for the suspense of the elections. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it's they've gone so far. Do you know what I'm? They've just gone so out there that it seems going to be very, very difficult for them to just let it go. I mean, they're just making so much money out of it.
Well,
I sent your cartoon to print.
Oh, I just got it. It's wonderful.
Do you like it?
Yeah, dear leader ripping the flag off the for his birthday present, you know, of the globe. You know, it's to replace the one you broke. I wish it wasn't so true, Sue.
Oh, so do I, Bob. So do I. I mean, what, it's a year today now for us. I mean, because I'm on the 7th over here. So it's a year now since those bombs went off in London. So,
Oh, my, it is the anniversary, isn't it?
Yeah. And I've lost another soldier now in Afghanistan.
Well, Afghanistan just went straight down the tubes today, didn't it?
The thing that's really worrying me is the two that we lost, the first two we lost, they were SAS. The ones we're losing now are three-power. These are not raw recruits that are out there.
No,
these are our top crack troops that are out there.
Yeah, this is the backbone of the British military that's being sacrificed. And
they're in Land Rovers.
Yeah.
They haven't even got, you know, there's pictures of them driving around in Land Rovers. They haven't even got hard hats.
It's, well, you know, someday, Tony Blair is going to have to tell the truth about why he did this. And frankly, I think when you see Tony Blair leave office and you know, it won't be trumpeted. There won't be a lot of noise made about it, Sue. It'll be a headline in, you know, page six of the Times business section.
Tomatoes, Bob.
Well, no, it'll be page six of the business section, and it'll be former Prime Minister Tony Blair named to Carlyle Group board.
But the thing is now, because we signed up to the International Criminal Court and everything, he's going to have to be very careful where he travels in the world, because he can be arrested in so many countries for war crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And he is liable under that, what we signed.
Oh, I think there's no doubt that he is.
Yeah. So, you know, he's going to just have to be very careful where he goes and serving.
Wherever it is wherever that is, Sue, he can't go there soon enough to suit me.
Well, me neither, Bob. Me neither, because, in The Guardian, I was looking at the leader and that, and they were saying in there that the government is worried now about a backlash coming from the people because of all these soldiers that are dying. Because what are they doing over there? They were meant to be going over there for reconstruction. And now the American command has sent them out to destroy bloody poppy fields.
Yep.
You know, they're not policemen. They're not gardeners.
Neither of the above.
No, and I'm furious. I'm temping about it. I really am. So I thought I'd phone you up and tell you.
Well, I do appreciate it, Sue.
That you're not the only ones that are feeling frustrated.
Well, it's, yeah, and it makes, I sometimes get tired of living in a world, Sue, where I feel like I'm half crazy all the time, and when I know I'm not.
Well, but, you know, and all of this, I spent years listening to people and government officials and, you know, diplomats and all that going on about Sharia law, this law based on religion, it's barbaric. And what are we being faced with?
Well, that's where the Dobsons and the Wildmans would like to take us, Sue.
Based on Christian ethics. I am not a Christian. I refuse to call myself a Christian.
I can't, you know, as long as the Falwells and the other charlatans are out there, I can't blame you.
Because as I do believe that there was a man called Jesus, and I do believe that he said some wonderful things, and that he did some wonderful things, and he laid down some lovely principles that are well worth following. And I don't see anybody in Christendom at this moment that seems to be following that. If you're a Christian, you follow the New Testament.
Yeah, and all that business about shellfish kind of goes out the window.
Yeah, all of this from the Old Testament, that's the Bible to the Jewish faith. It's nothing to do with us.
I understand.
Why do you bring all this eye for an eye crap in?
Oh, I know. Sue, we've got to take our break. It's so good to hear from you again.
Just blown off a bit of steam.
I
apologize if I've upset everybody, because I really do admire a lot of people I know that call themselves Christians, but it really, really gets my goat.
I know. Thank you so much, Sue, and you have have a wonderful Friday.
Oh, I will. Don't worry. I'm going to go and do some dancing now.
Sounds good. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Love you, Sue.
Love you, too, babe.
All right. Time for our top of the hour break. We'll come back and do some more phone calls. Guess what? Ken Lay's going to be cremated. This is for Mrs. Lay.
Quality News Network. In the Gaza Strip, at least 12 Palestinians were killed as Israeli troops advanced near populated towns. One Israeli soldier was killed, the first fatality since the offensive began a week ago. In Iraq, near the holy city of Najaf, 12 people died and 40 were injured in a suicide bombing at a Shiite Muslim shrine. Many of the dead and injured were Iranian pilgrims. At the White House, President Bush is urging diplomacy and a united international response to resolve the North Korean missile standoff. He says he has spoken with the leaders of China, South Korea, Japan, and Russia over the past few days. In Mexico City, it appears the conservative ruling party candidate has won Sunday's close presidential election. Felipe Calderon has an insurmountable lead in the vote count. His liberal rival refuses to accept the election results and has begun to challenge them in court. Out of the 41 million votes cast, fewer than 200,000 votes separate the two candidates. In New Jersey, lawmakers have reportedly reached an agreement on a state budget. One official says it includes a sales tax increase that would raise $1 billion a year and help close the state's $4.5 billion budget gap. The deal comes after a six-day government shutdown. In Austin, Texas, a federal judge ruled that the state Republican Party must keep Tom DeLay's name on the November ballot, even though the former House Majority Leader dropped his reelection bid and resigned his seat. President Bush will begin a series of formal news conferences outside of Washington beginning on Friday in Chicago. A White House official says this will allow the president to listen to people from different parts of the country and get a sense of what is on their minds. And President Bush celebrates his 60th birthday today. He says he doesn't feel old. In New York, the state's highest court ruled that gay couples cannot be married under state law. Additionally, the court said this restriction is not a violation of the state's constitution. Also in Georgia, the state Supreme Court reinstated a gay marriage ban that had won voter approval in 2004. The Space Shuttle Discovery linked up with the International Space Station today. The visit is expected to last for a week or more. And a new federal report says that high levels of carbon dioxide are altering the chemistry of the world's oceans and could be harming the animals living there. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is coming up next.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Without admitting wrongdoing, Merrill Lynch has agreed to a nearly $30 million settlement with Enron that will settle charges that it helped the company commit fraud. Autopsy results on former Enron founder Kenneth Lay, who died of a massive heart attack yesterday, reveal that the 64-year-old suffered from heart disease. Lay was awaiting sentencing for fraud and conspiracy when he died at his vacation home in Aspen, Colorado. In Washington, an FBI computer consultant faces up to a year in prison after he pleaded guilty to computer hacking charges. The consultant allegedly used free software he found on the Internet to obtain the secret passwords of the FBI director. Three Coca-Cola employees are facing charges of stealing confidential information from their company and trying to sell it to rival PepsiCo for $1.5 million. The three suspects were arrested yesterday after assistance from Pepsi and the FBI. GM's board will meet tomorrow to discuss a possible alliance with Nissan and Renault. The idea was proposed by billionaire investor Kirk Kerkorian, who owns the largest share in GM. Certified pre-owned cars are rising in popularity. According to statistics from J.D. Power and Associates, they now make up 41% of all used car dealership sales. Light sweet crude is trading at $75.14 a barrel. And taking a look at Wall Street, the Dow is up 73 points, the Nasdaq up 2. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Bramoff.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay, so don't everybody wait till the end of the program to call. If you've got something on your mind, you know the number. Learn it, know it, use it. Email bob@headonradio.com. Let's go straight to the phones. Jim has been waiting patiently, and we appreciate it. Jim, welcome to the program.
Bob, were you traumatized by disco when you were growing up?
It was tough. I mean, you know, there I am, you know, surrounded by nice, healthy, degenerate rock and roll, and I hit adolescence, and bang, disco. I mean, it was tough.
Well, you know, it wasn't all polyester or leisure suits. I never wore.
Oh, it was in Alabama. Trust me, Jim.
Well, it wasn't in New York City. I can tell you that. Or it wasn't in Washington. Or it was in other places.
Well, by the time it filtered down to Northwest Alabama, it was Kiana shirts, big butterfly bow ties, and leisure suits.
Yeah, but just all that stuff was kind of tacky. But the music was good. The music's still alive. It's very much alive. I mean, not everybody should be Tony Manero. It's played by John Travolta, but I mean, you just played two good songs on this, Day and Night Fever and then Donna Summer. I mean, there were some good artists who came out. Casablanca Records was hot.
Oh, it was, and anybody who was everybody was on that Casablanca label.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they just marvelous things on that. And, you know, at least people back in those days were shaking their ass and not showing them the way they are today. That's sure.
Well, fairly said, Jim.
I mean, you know, they had, it may have been mindless to a lot of people, and I can understand that, but, you know, I have some fond recollections of those days of the mindlessness and the carelessness or carefreelessness or whatever you want to call it. At least we weren't confronted by a lot of the stuff that we're confronted with today, you know, and to a certain extent, there's a lot of handsome nostalgia about some of those things.
Yeah. Oh, well, without a doubt. And, you know, but like I said, when Ethel Merman finally got around to doing the Ethel Merman disco album, I knew we were in real trouble.
Oh, that No Business Like Show Business thing?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's what it was called, the Ethel Merman Disco Album. Ugh.
Well, everybody was into that. I mean, you know, good Lord, why not? I mean, you had an 84-year-old woman in Studio 54 who got married to Pink Floyd's The Wall. I had a friend in New York who worked for Paramount Pictures, and this is a short story. And anyway, he was asked to go up to Gloria Swanson's house, and I, you know, used to go to New York during the summers, and she wanted him to catalog all of her old movies. Well, the trouble is they were on nitrate-based film.
Oh, dear.
And he took one look at that place, and he told her, he said, you're living in a bomb shelter. Or you're living in a, not a bomb shelter, but a bomb factory, because that stuff just turns to crud and then boom, nitroglycerin. But this friend of mine was pretty well connected. One night we got into Studio 54.
Oh, wow.
It was anything but polyester. I can assure you of that. But it's a pity that, you know, it got a little excessive and, you know, trends move on. It went into New Age and other types of things. New Wave and other types of things, but there's some good music came out of there, that's for sure, I think.
Oh, overall, yeah, it was a shock to the system to somebody who had to that point in time been growing up to rock and roll.
Well, but look at the kind of rock and roll that led you into it. I mean, some of it was good and some of it wasn't.
Zeppelin? Skinnerd? Molly Hatchett?
Yeah.
Clapton? The Stones? Queen?
You know, that's true. That's true. I mean, you had good and bad, and a lot of the stuff that still survived. But like I say, it wasn't all polyester, and there were a lot of people who just, you know, nothing sees like excess. And it was a lot of excess in those days, that's for sure. But, hey, you know, as Emily Dickinson once said, a lot of people's candles burned at both ends and gave them forth a lovely light. They didn't last long, though, unfortunately.
Since we're kind of on a cultural topic, Jim, I got to ask, have you seen the movie Elizabethtown?
No, uh-uh.
I've been meaning to tell you, that should be a must on your list.
Why is this?
It's just an excellent, enjoyable, fun little movie with all of the, you know, it's just rife with Southern nuance. You know Paula Deen from the Food Network?
Yeah, I've seen her.
She's got one of the leading supporting female roles in the film, and is just wonderful. I think you'll find it an enjoyable film.
What's the name of the film again?
Elizabethtown.
Elizabethtown.
Yeah, directed by Cameron Crowe.
Okay.
It's got a gorgeous soundtrack and just some over the top southernness.
Hmm.
And the folks in the chat room are going, "Yep, great movie, amazing movie." So apparently, you know, my recommendation is being backed up.
Is this the current film?
It came out 5-6 months ago on video. It should be. It should. I mean, I know it's available through things like Blockbuster and Netflix, and probably at your local video rental place.
Oh, okay.
But I've been meaning to mention to it. I think you will enjoy it. And you know, we don't have to talk about politics all the time. And it's fun to just see what people are into and what's good and what's not. And there are some truly funny moments in the film. And Orlando Bloom turns in a good performance. Kirsten Dunst is just amazing. And like I said, Paula Deen, who knew she could act?
Yeah, well, it's amazing the people, what you see. That's very, 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 very true.
Yeah, Bruce Birch is in the chat room, and he says you have to watch the film if nothing but for the Freebird scene.
He is. Bruce is.
Yeah, and the Freebird scene is simply amazing.
Okay, yeah, I talked to Bruce this afternoon. As a matter of fact, we had a quotation from Benjamin Franklin. You probably heard it.
I heard it.
Did you?
Yes.
Well, I think you need to look that up. I think you need to read that. I think it'd be a great, great reading for one of your programs.
Well, you've shared it on this program.
What, Fart Proudly?
Yes, you have.
Bob, I must be getting senile.
No, it's just the shows pile up after a while, Jim.
I mean, you know, they had a wonderful program about Franklin last night on one of the History Channel, and I had no idea that that man did all the stuff he did and invented the stuff he did.
Invented the medical catheter.
Well, he invented just about everything, the post office and that to the...
The library, the fire department.
Just everything from stoves to... just about. It's just incredible how talented he was. It's a pity that his relations with his son deteriorated to the point that they did, you know.
But, you know, that's what happens when internecine struggles hit a place. That's the nature of civil war. And in essence, you know, because we're looking backward at it and it's history, Jim, we call it the American Revolution. It was a civil war at the time.
Well, it was not a good time for a lot of people because, you know, 20% of the American populace left America and went back either to Canada, Nova Scotia, or to the mother country.
Right.
And, of course, let me put it this way, you know, even... Oh, what was that horrible movie by Mel Gibson that he put...
Oh, The Patriot?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it was just typical more of Mel Gibson's crap.
Yeah, well, you know, another instance of trying to figure out which way Mel will be tortured this time. You know, he can't make a movie without getting tortured.
Well, you know, in this film, he has Colonel Tarleton being bayoneted on the field or something like that. Hal Tarleton went back to England and even and became a nobleman and... Lord Cornwallis later went back to govern India. And, you know, the Tories burned his, I mean, the Patriots, the Americans burned as many homes and did to the Tories what the British did to Mel Gibson.
Well, you know, I love the fact that the Battle of Kings Mountain was basically won by a bunch of drunken rednecks from out of the mountains. I mean, that really saved the revolution.
Yeah, it's true. It is. But, you know, what some people don't realize is this. So, you know, King George III was one of the first ones, one of the first Hanoverians to speak English.
And well, our good friend Eugene Feinerman pointed that out in his 4th of July posting at thestreet.com.
Yeah, and, you know, basically what he wanted to do, all these acts that we objected so strenuous to, had been on the books since 1733.
He just started enforcing them.
And for one good reason... He wanted us to pay for the French and Indian War. And we were real glad to have those redcoats there when the French and Indians were howling, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, but in the long run, I'm terribly grateful for the likes of John Hancock and all of the Adamses. And, you know, Thomas Paine is my personal hero out of that whole era. One of the bravest and brightest minds produced and, you know, certainly didn't get the respect that he was due.
No.
Because he was a proud atheist and he wouldn't hide behind some, you know, he just said, you know, look, I am. And everybody, ooh, bad man.
So, Bob, in those days, you know, it was a difficult time for people who did not.
It's not like it's really changed, Jim. There was a survey not too awfully long back that said, Americans felt like they couldn't trust an atheist, which is just about the silliest load of hooey that, you know, I've seen come down the road in a while.
Well, I hate to see the religion industry have all Christians who believe in the church they were brought up in painted with the brush that they would like to see that, because that is... That's just not altogether true.
Well, there's some truth in what Barack Obama has been saying and Hillary has been echoing, that we've got to stop ceding this ground to the religion industry. You know, the Roman Catholics in this country need to understand that the Dobsons and Falwells someday hope to get to kill them. And it has to be said in no uncertain terms. American Jewry has to understand that for all the talk about supporting Israel, at the base of all of this is a hope on the part of Robertson and Falwell and that ilk that someday they get to kill them. They hope for it. They pray for it because they believe in a Jesus who comes back and kills the Jews. I'm not kidding. I mean, I know this stuff, Jim.
I believe that's when the Jews would have a second chance to... Except Christianity, according to... Isn't that what they say? I don't know.
Well, what they say is that when Jesus comes back, the Jews will be told to convert or die. And Falwell and Robertson are, you know, they're looking for the day they get to put some Jews to the sword.
Well,
it's disgusting. It's violent and vicious and hateful, and you know, it's what they do.
But you know, if in fact all those wonders do appear that are predicted, you know, in according to say the Book of Revelation, I wouldn't think it would take a whole lot of effort to convince anybody of the truth.
But the thing is, Jim, the Book of Revelation isn't about something that's about to happen. The Book of Revelation is about something that already happened. It's an allegorical commentary on the Roman Empire. Any good Bible scholar will tell you that.
Well, I don't know about your church, but I've always taught to believe that basically it's basically prophecy of things that might come. I don't know.
And that arises, Jim, out of
I'm not a theologian.
Well, that arises out of the cult that was started by this English theologian named Darby in what, the 1840s?
Yeah. But
he got all of that going. Even the early church fathers, Marcion, among others, recognized Revelations for what it was.
Where Darby got that from? Now, Darby got the rapture and all that stuff from Paul, because that's in the Book of Thessalonians.
Some of it is.
He didn't make that up, but I mean, you know.
But some of the doctrine that follows it, Jim, is made up out of whole cloth.
Well, I don't know, I'm not a theologian, and I can't make any pretension to be. But there are churches, there are Christian churches that do not preach that sort of exclusivity and mindlessness and bigotry.
And those churches, that's my point, Jim. Those churches need to have patiently and gently explained to them that they are not co-religionists with the megachurch people and the Southern Baptists and the Robertsons and Dobsons and Falwells and the Westboro Baptist Church and the Pentecostals and they are not co-religionists, because none of those people are truly Christian.
Well, I think
they're cultists.
Truth will eventually out, and these people will be seen for what they are.
Well, it doesn't Scripture say that the road to hell is broad and wide and straight or something, and easy to follow?
Yeah, straight is the gate, and narrow is the way, and few be there that find it.
The road to hell.
As far as heaven is.
Yeah, but the road to hell is awfully easy to get on, and the Scripture says that most people are on it. Now, if that's the case, then I don't know why I don't know why these people who are so wrapped up in hating people or bigotry against people for what they do when the lights go out, I don't know what road they think they're on. But they ought to look around and realize that if it is true, as they say, that 80% of America agrees with them, that looks like a mighty broad road.
Well, yeah, it's the superhighway. There's no question about it.
And it goes straight to perdition.
It is an Autobahn. There's no question about that. And, you know, I think true Christianity is very hard to follow, and it's very hard to, you know, truly.
I think it's harder to find than it is to follow, because you've got to sort through a whole bunch of hooey and claptrap to get to it.
It's easy to find, Bob. It's hard to follow. Now, I swear I'm beg to differ with you there, but like I say, I think that the Roman Catholics and us, and I know my church, the Episcopal Church or Anglican Church, have begun to realize that these people, and always realize to a certain extent them for what they are. I mean, the Roman Church follows the dictates of the Curia and the Pope and things of a certain.
Yeah, but they jumped right. I mean, that creepy William Donahue, head of the Catholic League in America.
Remember back in the 30s, you had that Father Coughlin.
Father Coughlin, sure.
You,
in many ways, the father of talk radio.
Right. I mean, you had a number of people who took their own way and departed from the teachings of the Vatican and things like that. Yes, they did, and they were eventually brought to heel for it.
But you see, the problem that we have in the current era, Jim, is that, among other things, it was this man who is presently on the so-called throne of St. Peter, who started all of the problems in the last electoral cycle by suggesting that John Kerry not be given communion because he believed a woman, that he didn't believe enforcing his beliefs onto some female that he didn't know. And as a consequence, you got the Roman Church jumped in bed with these right-wing freaks like Dobson and Wildman and Falwell and made for an unholy alliance. But the thing I keep trying to come back to is the Roman Catholics need to understand that those guys want to kill them someday. Well, and do it in the name of Jesus.
I'm certain that one day they will be made painfully aware of that. And, you know, there have been popes before who have made very, very serious errors in judgment. And this is something, and as I've said to you before, where there is greatness, there's always the possibility of great error. And, you know, I don't know. When I think of religion and I think of things of that nature, I think of a lot of the music and the art, like Fauré's Requiem instead of some of the stuff that maybe other people are associated with. I don't know. And in that sense, I am being an elitist, and I'm proud of being an elitist as far as my faith is concerned.
Well, I mean, you can't. I mean, you like the disco we were playing a minute ago. You know, the spiritual genesis of all Western music lies in the church, and I acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Art. You know,
Adam number one. You know, it basically did, and you know, the church has done lots of good things, and like I say, don't let these mega churches and these current people who are trying to make money out of it, like Falwell and Robertson and so many of the others, so many have gotten on the sawdust trail, you know?
Yeah, but I hope you understand when I say
that
they have got
I don't know exactly.
They've got to be confronted, Jim.
Because, I mean, they don't like people like me either, you know? They hate me just as much as they hate anybody else, if not more so.
Everybody that's not like them gets put to the sword when Jesus comes back and he's golden El Dorado. I mean, that's how they are.
Well, I don't think he needs a golden El Dorado. And I don't think that I think that these people were even mentioned in the Bible as being false prophets and people who were using...
Well, as our good friend Peter has noted in the past, the only time that the word Antichrist appears in the Bible, it is used in the plural. And it speaks of a time when humanity will be set by any number of Antichrists.
Well, I don't know if they're the Antichrists. I mean, I think they believe that everybody's Antichrist. And I mean, I say they think the United Nations is his base, his forum. And they have a lot of strange ideas, and I don't know. I mean, these are things that are just way over my head, and I don't tend to have any real understanding of them, other than by a certain element of simple faith that I just have, and it leaves me a lot more comfortable to leave it and to leave the rest alone. You know, I just don't. And I hate to see these people mislead so many others the way they have done, and to breed the intolerance and the lack of love and compassion and understanding. As I've told you before, these people will labor like scholars over the pedigree of their own stupidity and lack of compassion for others, but yet all of them would definitely have snored right through the Sermon on the Mount.
Well, that's the thing. There's a lot. There's a whole lot of time spent on Revelations and the maunderings of Paul, and not nearly enough spent on Matthew chapter 25.
Well, Pauline theology does have a lot of, you know, Pauline theology to a certain extent is very misogynistic, and you know, and the modern church, at least in certain churches, are trying to overcome some of that, and you know, there are things in there that are kind of hard to swallow, but, you know, the words in red, trying to pay attention to those and do the best you can.
Well, that's why I never get past Luke.
Well,
with an occasional foray over into the Gospel of St. Thomas.
I'll tell you something, and I'll let you go. I know we differ on a lot of things. There are a lot of interesting programs on this, and there's one on the Biography Channel. It's narrated by Gene Simmons. It's called Mysteries of the Bible. And they have a lot.
Not Gene Simmons from Kiss, the actress.
No. I'm talking about Gene Simmons who played in The Robe.
Yeah, that. Okay, yeah, just being clear.
Oh, yeah, no. Not
the guy with the tongue.
No, not him. I can't imagine.
Well, you see what it did to me.
I can see it's a 7-inch tongue, but nonetheless, I mean, there are some good series out on TV that cut through a lot of this stuff. And, you know, it's called Mysteries of the Bible, and they're really fascinating things.
Well, it is. I've seen some of that. Jim, thanks so much. We've got to roll along to the break, but have yourself a wonderful evening, all right?
Likewise.
All right, take care. And when we come back, a couple of stories we haven't gotten to yet. My good friend Victor sent me this one in particular, and I gotta share it with you. If you haven't heard it somewhere else, maybe you have. It was news to me. About Dear Leader's trip to Austria. Oy. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On.
Place on the web you can go where everything is so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there working hard for you every day. It's a place where you can go to raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. WBYAD40.com. So stop on by. The 101st Fighting Keyboardists of Kansas are ready to hear your opinion. There are topics of news, current events, and great humor. So let Clyde, Wally, and Dookie know that you're a working person too. WD40.com. Stop on by.
This is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me for a brand new show here on the Horn, the Bruce Birch Radio Program. Tune in Monday through Friday, 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Hello?
Louise, it's Ralph. Listen, would you go out with me tomorrow?
At 8? Ralph, I'd love to.
Well, I have an appointment with my orthopedic surgeon, and I really want you to come along.
A doctor's office? That's so special. Oh, I just remembered I have to delete some emails.
Come on, Louise. We're going to talk about the pain in my hip, and I could use a little support.
I guess I'm not very hip.
You could take notes and help me remember stuff. Look, I have all my doctor questions written down, but there's so much to remember. I need you there with me so I don't miss anything.
Couldn't we just play miniature golf?
Louise, I'm not asking for a kidney.
Bringing someone to your appointment is a good way to make sure you and your physician are on the same page. The idea is to partner with your doctor and share information so you can make informed decisions together. For more on patient-doctor communications, visit orthoinfo.org, a message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, where patient-centered care means getting better together.
But that ain't getting us nowhere.
25 minutes before we wrap up the program for the night. Okay, a couple of things I had forgotten. I was about to mess up. You guys got to help. I promised you the 7-minute public service announcement for not huffing glue. That was the comments in the committee hearing about net neutrality last week. Our good friend David in Maine turned me on to this, and I cut off a little bit of the early insanity. Like I said, this is about 7 minutes long, okay? I don't think there's another radio program out there that is going to let you hear this unexpurgated, okay? It's going to, you know, they're going to cut the real insanity out, but you've got to hear it in context. This guy, Ted Stevens, is crazy. Okay, you remember when he melted down over the bridge to nowhere? You remember we had the sound bites of him? Now, I don't know if I'm going to come back to the Senate. Yeah, that's more like Ted Stevens. Well, he came back, and more is the pity. Because apparently while he was gone, God only knows. I mean, you know, I don't know if there are enough illicit compounds out there to get me to where he is in this comment. Just listen. Listen. I'm gonna shut up. You listen, okay?
This is the non-discriminatory portion of the bill. We demand that the internet not discriminate against consumers. Now, the heart of non-discrimination is really the heart of carrier regulation. What the senator is talking about is allowing all of these entities that support this to provide streaming stuff going on the internet. Now, the internet, you know, let's go back. Internet started with a concept of local-to-local connections across the country. You could go for Air Alaska, but you had to go through local connections to get there. The industry wisely provided for streaming for, in effect, a new kind of long distance, and that's what we've got. We've got a service that's
anybody following this?
And it's there for the consumer. But when we take indicate that anyone that wants to use this system for massive commercial purposes, there's one company now. You can get sign up and you can get a movie delivered to your house daily.
This is where it starts getting fun by
delivery service. Okay, and currently it comes to your house. It put in a mailbox when you get home, annually or monthly, you change your order. But you pay for that, right? This service is now going to go through the internet, and what you do is you just go to a place on the internet, and you order your movie, and guess what? You can order 10 of them, and it's delivered to you, and this delivery charge is free, right? 10 movies streaming across that internet. And what happens to your own personal internet?
I haven't had a conversation like this since college.
Internet was sent by my staff at 10 o'clock in the morning on Friday. I got it yesterday. Why? Because it got tangled up with all of these things that are going on the internet commercially. See, we want to talk about the consumer. Let's talk about you and me. We use this internet for communication. We're not using it for commercial purposes. We're not earning anything by going on that internet. Now, I'm not saying you have to discriminate or you want to discriminate against those people. I'm not saying we haven't seen anything yet that indicates there is discrimination. And until you can define it, I'm opposed to the concepts that are applied by your recommendation. We already have unfair competition. I've already said if you want to make a special provision with regard to antitrust laws.
Welcome to the Republican Party.
We made an agreement. I don't know if you know this. With the Judicial Committee, we would not deal with antitrust concepts in this committee. They're going to look at the internet from the point of view of antitrust, and they're going to report something concerning antitrust to the floor, and we'll decide whether we add that to this bill or whether they have to do it separately. But the regulatory report approach is wrong. Your approach is regulatory. It's regulatory in the sense that it says no one can charge anyone for massively invading this world of the internet.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. I thought you were finished. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not finished. I've listened.
No, he ain't finished. Trust me. I listened to it. He ain't finished.
I'm not going to take a lot of time. But
wait a minute.
Those people who support these things that you passed out, Senator, are the people who want to use the internet for the end use of their profit, not for the consumer.
Duh.
And these are people who are charging, in effect, for what they're delivering. Now, I think the result, if we went your way, instead of paying $30 a month, we'd be paying $50 to $60 a month. Will it be fewer broadband subscribers? It will restrict it. I think that's why the world has turned against this. They have not done
huh?
it.
Oh, my God.
There has been...
You hear the little girl in the background? Oh, my God.
A violation in the sense that we call net neutrality. As a matter of fact, in our bill, we have a provision that requires the FCC to monitor this. If they find anything that looks like a violation of internet neutrality, they must immediately call it to the attention of Congress. Until that time, we are saying that they cannot invade this area and start regulations of the type that the senator is describing.
In a minute, he's going to tell you how the internet really works.
Network security, network independence, is absolutely essential. The wrong regulatory approach, imposing a heavy-handed regulation before there's a demonstrated need, is wrong. And the senator, whether you realize that, you're asking for regulation. You're asking for a two-tiered system. You're asking now that you tell people who do have these systems...
Sniff some glue at your leisure. It might help.
Ask that someone pay for the increased capability they provide what? For business. I don't have to have that kind of speed they're talking about in terms of the speeds that they're going to put in the internet. But the people who are streaming through 10, 12 movies at a time or a whole book at a time consumers' use, those are not you and me. They're not the consumers. They're the providers. And those people who provide these things over and use the internet for a delivery service rather than for a concept of communication.
Oh, but you haven't heard the best part yet. Here it comes.
And I do not believe that net neutrality is something that... Well, I would say this. I don't think anyone here has defined what net neutrality is. And we've heard that we're slipping behind. This bill is designed to let us go ahead, to expand the whole concept of communication. And here we have this one situation where enormous entities want to use the internet for their purpose to save money for doing what they're doing now.
Huh?
They use FedEx. They use the delivery services. They use the mail. They deliver in other ways, but they want to deliver vast.
This guy's mad at Netflix
over the internet. And again, the internet is not something that you just dump something on. It's not a big truck.
It's not a big truck.
It's a series of tubes. You don't understand those tubes can be filled, and if they're filled, when you put your message in, it gets in line. It's going to be delayed by anyone that puts into that tube enormous amounts of material. Enormous amounts of material. Now, we have a separate Department of Defense that now. Do you know that? You know why? Because they have to have theirs delivered immediately. They can't afford getting delayed by other people.
I see. They thought I was crazy. But I fooled them with the strawberries.
It's a separate net for defense. Now, I think these people are arguing whether they should be able to dump all that stuff on the internet, ought to consider whether they ought to build a system themselves. Maybe there is a place for a commercial net, but it's not using what the consumers use every day. It's not using the messaging service that is essential, I think, to this small business. It's essential to our operation of families. The whole concept is that we should not go into this until someone shows that there's something that's been done that really is a violation of net neutrality. That is you and me. If one of the big corporations that want this net neutrality concept adopted.
You know, there's a gag out there that says that the old Sicilian mafia made that. You know, what's the difference between the Republican Party and the Sicilian Mafia? You know, the Sicilian Mafia made you an offer you couldn't refuse. The Republican Party makes you an offer you can't understand. How do you debate with a freak like that? I mean, the internet is not some big truck that you just dump stuff on it. The internet is actually a series of big tubes, and things go in the tubes. This is out of that Terry Gilliam picture. This is out of Brazil, okay? I mean, this is that scene where with the tubes running around the back of the this is nuts. Let's go to the phones. Ben is with us, I think. Ben, you there?
Hey there.
That made negative sense. I mean, things I actually had in my head that I knew quite well, I no longer know.
It's gone. It just sucks your brains out. I mean,
It did. I mean, I think that probably 4 or 5 years of experience designing internet software just went away.
I mean, this is like an invasion of the body snatcher for the I mean, the first time, Ben, can you imagine? I've listened to this like 10 times. I'm having trouble with my shoelaces.
Can we be charitable and say this is probably senile dementia setting in?
I got an internet last week, and you know what? I didn't get it till Friday because it was all tied up behind them movies. You know, what's his staff watching, Ben?
Porn?
Yes. This guy's pissed off at Netflix.
Yes.
Because see, they're using Federal Express now, but they won't use it. They'll put it in my internet. Jesus, somebody needs to put something in his tang.
That's why I'm paying $109 a month for internet.
Well, and you've got bandwidth from hell.
Yeah.
But this is the cogent debate offered by the Republican Party as the reason that we should not at least suggest to Verizon and Bell South and AT&T and Comcast and Cox and all of those other that they should not be able that shouldn't be able to create an internet ghetto. And this is the response in their favor.
You know,
this is
if arguments were what you needed to win something in Congress, he'd lose. But unfortunately, it's money that is what you need to win things in Congress. So he's going to win.
This, I mean, Ben, you know, you're the linchpin in this head-on radio network operation.
As a loose linchpin today, I'm afraid, but
this guy, that 7.5 minutes.
Yeah.
Could be all it takes in the world to destroy the horn.
Yeah.
I mean, does that make you want to... it makes negative sense. You're right. I'm dumber for having listened to it.
That's right. Oh, I've got a joke for you before I go.
Okay.
What is the difference between Ann Coulter and a bowling ball?
You can only get 3 fingers in a bowling ball.
No, if you absolutely
shame on me for that
too, you could eat the bowling ball.
Well, I knew it was going to be nasty either way, so you know.
You take care, sir.
I'm gonna try. You know, we might just rerun that just to end the program.
There you go.
All right, see you, Ben.
Bye.
Bye. And Roz is calling. Roz, welcome to the program.
Hi.
How are you?
Good, real good. I was just telling Agnes that a month ago I was at a Flag Day event, and Loretta Sanchez was there. She was a featured speaker.
Okay.
And I told the organizers of it that I was going after her because the day before was the day the House voted on the net neutrality, and she had voted against it, or she had voted.
Well, that's the thing that's so frustrating, Roz. My congressman here, who is very high tech, very pro technology, Nick Rahal, he voted against net neutrality in the House, and I sent him an email, and I was very polite. I didn't say, you know, you scurrilous so and so. There were because if you go to Thomas and you look up the bill, Roz, you'll find really good, dependable Democratic congressman voted against net neutrality. And you know why? They were told that voting against this bill would mean that people's cable bills went down. No kidding.
Right. Right. Well, listening to Stevens reminded me of Loretta, because as I was talking to her, she was using basically the same talking points he was. She kept saying, well, it's like a toll road and a regular road, and the toll road you have to pay because you can go a little faster. And I looked at her and I said, I'm wireless. How much faster do I need to go?
Yeah, you're limited by the technology. But I'm amazed that you heard talking points in there. I heard...
Oh, it was the same thing Loretta Sanchez was saying to me. It was unbelievable. These people have no business talking about this stuff unless they understand it.
These Republicans, Roz, talk about how, you know, small business is the cornerstone of the American economy. Well, they're going to, if they don't enact net neutrality, they're going to kill a whole lot of small business.
Well, it's like a friend of mine said, too, and this is something that people don't think about. She said, what are teachers, school teachers going to do? What are people, libraries going to do? You know, are the libraries and the overtaxed schools now going to have to pay extra for teachers to do their research, for kids to do their research? Or are they going to have to sit around and wait for an hour for something to, you know, to download? That just wipes out a whole segment of society that...
The sad thing, Roz, is that the whole purpose behind all this push by the big telecoms, you know, it's not about your broadband here at your home or mine here or what runs this business. This whole thing is pointed straight at Vonage, just at Vonage, because Vonage has shown the world what a dog and pony show long distance is. And this is the attack of the buggy whip makers on Henry Ford's first auto plant. I mean, that's what it boils down to. This is Verizon and Bell South and AT&T and SBC and all those guys. This is them attacking the future.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely it is that.
But if they get to ghettoize it, you know, what happens when somebody pays Verizon to say, you know, that they want preferential treatment over horn content, and so you can't listen to the programming anymore.
Right.
That's very possible under a non-net neutral world.
Mm-hmm.
You know what happens when the networks that operate Rush and Savage and Hannity and those creeps? What happens when they pay off the big telecoms to make sure that Air America's content can't get out in a timely fashion?
Exactly. Now this net neutrality thing just really is scary. It really is scary, and it's you know, and it comes down to, it's like a friend of mine once observed, is that the thing, one of the biggest things wrong with the Bush administration and their contributors is that somebody, they're scared to death that somebody's going to spend a nickel and they're not going to get 4 cents of it.
Yeah.
And that's what I think it really comes down to.
And, well, the other thing the big telecoms are afraid of is if you pay attention to what's going on in the rest of the world, and our friend Peter just noted this in the chat room, the rest of the world is moving ahead with massively faster broadband speeds.
Mm-hmm.
And the telecoms don't want to run the risk of having some regulatory scheme in place that might tell them, look, you can't rip off the American consumer. You have to give as fast as you can give.
Right.
But to sit there and listen to Ted Stevens, and like I said, I edited that. I took 4 or 5 minutes out of it.
it just reminded me of Loretta Sanchez that day telling me how I wasn't going to have to pay for it. She said, oh, no, it's going to be free, she says. And I looked at her and I said, how's it going to be free? I pay for it now. Oh, no, you don't. I said, well, then I better tell AT&T because they're taking $16.95 out of my checking account every month.
Yeah, right.
It's going to be free, she said. I was like, Jesus, go back and read this. And I finally had to stop because I realized, you know, it was like she didn't know what the hell she was talking about, and I'm just going to have to get away from her.
And well, Roz, God bless you. You know, God bless you for making the attempt. And I think you can go to congress.gov, I think, and you can navigate your way to find this bill. And you can see the list of people who voted for it.
Oh, yeah, I know. I was amazed at the people that did.
Democrat after Democrat after Democrat.
Yeah. No, I was absolutely amazed, that, you know, about it, with it. Just amazed.
Well, it's just spooky.
And you would think that by now they, you know, how come, why is it that all of us kept caught on to this dog and pony show, and these guys sitting in Congress haven't figured it out yet? They keep going back and, you know, falling for the same old crap every time. I don't get it.
Well, I think we've got to try to enlighten the Democrats, because if they're going to do this, if they're going to take away the public internet, the Democrats would be well to get on board and say that you will do this over our no votes.
Yeah. Something. It's getting
getting worse and worse.
Oh, it is. You know, we've just got to be ever vigilant. Roz, we're almost out of time. Thank you. Thank you so much for getting in touch.
Sure.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah.
All right.
Lucky I get to listen to you this week.
Okay. Great to know you're out there.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, you know, so I didn't get to the Austria George Bush story. We'll save that. You know, that's really kind of a Friday story anyway, isn't it, Agnes? Because, you know, you just got to, you know, you got to make it through the final indignities, and then we'll get you that one. So that's for tomorrow. Right. You know, check it out. Congress.gov and navigate through Thomas. You know, you guys are much better at this kind of stuff than I am. Maybe one of the people in the room can post it or post it at headonradionetwork.com. The list of people who voted against net neutrality in the House of Representatives. If you find your congressman happens to be a Democrat and voted along with the Republicans, you know, be nice about it, but straighten them out, please. If you enjoy this show, help straighten them out, because an absence of net neutrality could severely limit our ability to bring you this network. It's that serious. And trust me, that's really serious to Agnes and me. And I know you guys care, and I think it's serious to you, too, because it's going to have an impact on you beyond listening to this or any other streamed radio program. It's going to have an impact on your ability to do a lot of the stuff that you do on the Internet. It's literally censorship. The show, of course, tonight was produced by my darling wife, Agnes. Announced by Brian Reznor. Our chief engineer of the Head On Radio Network is John Fox in Sydney, Australia. He's amazing. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers in Tallahassee, Florida, makes all the electrons behave. And Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org manages the streams of this and all the other fine programs of the Head On Radio Network, as well as the archives and podcasting thereof. He's got a fundraiser going on. Do the right thing, because Ben, the hardest working man in liberal talk, will not send you a bill. He's busy working. So it's up to you. And, of course, all programs on the Horn happen because of the dedication of the thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. They get up, they go to work every day, they build the American dream. It's that simple. And yet so complex. Because in doing so, they also support this network, which means they're working on saving the American dream as well. And as ever, always... always, always, RMR, it's all for you.